Around with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to another week of broadcasting here on the Horn. Dadgum, I think we're going to have a high old time tonight. The Moranosphere apparently ran perilously close to the solar winds and thereby deluged the Earth in bozo rays or something. Oh, we're going to be busy. Yes, yes, yes. But you know what? Before we get started, I've gotten emails all weekend about, hey, Bob, how was the chili? What was the chili like? Was the chili okay? You know what? Nobody died. And I had a blast. I absolutely had a blast. You know, I spent like 2 days working on the chili. Two types. And then we served it up on Saturday. And it was a lot of fun. I was, let's put it this way. Late Friday night, because what would it be in Bridge Day? I had to go over Friday night, or else I never would have gotten over Saturday morning, because they shut the bridge down, and the little two-lane road that takes you from here to across the river is unpassable for all the traffic. So I went over Friday night, and Friday night stopped at a little place where everybody was meeting up because I stayed with some friends, and I'd never been to their house before, so necessarily I had to, and you don't go wandering around in the hills by yourself. Just so we stopped and we met at this little Mexican restaurant in Fayetteville called Diogi's, and it's big fun. Oh God, hold on, audio issues, time out. We'll get this working right. Yeah, okay, Fergun must have been in here screwing around or something. Gonna have to put a padlock on the studio door. Confound it. Yes, he was. And that should have fixed everything. My apologies for the delay. So we met up at Diogi's, which is a little Mexican restaurant, and the guy who does the cooking there is a wonderful, wonderful guy named Oscar. And everybody was sitting back and relaxing at the end of the day, and everybody we'd talk about who was going to serve what and so forth. And Oscar looks over and says, I haven't made mine yet. Because he was making a chili. And of course, you know, when the guy who runs the Mexican restaurant says, I haven't made the chili yet, I looked at him and said, you're sandbagging. You are sandbagging. I know you're sandbagging. You're going to sit here and swill tequila for another hour and a half, and then you're going to, you'll get up tomorrow morning 15 minutes before it's due, and you'll whip something together, and it'll win. And he laughed, and I laughed, and that's what happened. Except the tequila swilling part. That was a joke. No, he won the competition. It was not, he got up Saturday morning, made it, and whipped everybody's ass. It was beautiful. But I got a lot of compliments on the chili, and I was really tickled about that. The red and the green. Just walking around the restaurant, I could see a lot of sweat popping out on a lot of hairlines, which meant that, and a couple, oh, it's hot! At least nobody said they preferred the Hormel, you know, because I would have, they would have had to hold me back. But it was a lot of fun. And you know what? It was instructive. I got to, the way it worked out, instead of being public and like little booths and stuff like a chili fest normally is, it was all individual restaurants. So I was working in my friend's restaurant and did the chili making there, and it was, you know. And I was there from open to close. And you know what? Anybody, I believe this with all my heart. Anybody who has ever sat at a table in a restaurant and thought that their meal was not exactly to their liking, or that something, you know, oh, damn, I told them no radishes in the salad. Anybody who's ever done that, you know, where's my beer? Anybody who has ever sat in a seat in a restaurant should at some point in their lives take a turn, one shift, open to close, the whole damn day, inside a restaurant, and see what goes on. Because, you know, I watched, there's a reason that Anthony Bourdain talks about the restaurant personnel and people who aren't restaurant personnel. He refers to the people who aren't restaurant personnel as civilians. It was like watching something working on a ship of the line. It was amazing. It was thrilling to watch, and just hard work. So I hope. I don't know if you ever had the chance, like some sort of celebrity guest waiter or volunteer guest waiter or even at your shelter or home. That would be some good volunteer work. You need to see what goes on in a real kitchen, because it ain't like anything you've ever seen before in your life. And I was dog tired. I got home at midnight Saturday after leaving here about 9 p.m. Friday. Got home midnight Saturday and was just exhausted, but pleasantly so. One fella came walking briskly through the crowd. And, "Did you make the red chili?" "Yeah, I made the red chili." Grabbed my hand, started shaking it like it was like I was a politician. "I just want you to know that is the best chili I have ever eaten in my entire life." "Well, thank you, sir. God, it's good." And it warms your heart. Yeah, Marty, I get that. Yeah, if the chili doesn't melt the spoon or make you think it will, it's not hot enough. But you know what? Mine was plenty hot with, I might add, the use of no habaneros, because I hate the taste of habaneros. They got a funky flavor to them, like I said. And the green chili with the hickory roasted, hickory smoked pork. Oh, that was, I had people, there were people, "I have never tasted anything like this before in my life." Well, neither had I. I'm just glad it worked out the way it did. So, you know, I had a lot of fun. And I guess Bridge Day was a big success. It was all gray and rainy and miserable on Friday. And then Saturday dawned, and it was a perfect day from beginning to end. Oh, it was beautiful. Just beautiful. No, I don't have any pictures, because it was all taking place inside the restaurant, so I didn't actually go out and see any of Bridge Day per se. I didn't see people. I've been there before. And, you know, you get out in that crowd of 100,000 people on two lanes of a four-lane bridge, 876 feet in the air. If the claustrophobia or the acrophobia kicks in right there, it's not a place you want to be. Just not. But that's enough shilly-shallying and fooling about. I should let you, let's get on with the show, as the saying goes. Let me start one little observation. And it's a little conceit. And perhaps a little conceited. But I saw one of these things go down where, you know, and anybody could come up with it. But you like to, it kind of boosts you and helps you, get along through the day, sort of, if you know what I mean. It was on Friday, I think, or maybe Thursday. Maybe it was Thursday. Yeah, it was Thursday. It was Thursday that I was tweeting about, John, you remember John, Rocket Man Racy, who said he wanted, he wants to cut federal spending, but he wants a $20 billion laser program. And the first thing I thought of was Dr. Evil. "All I want is some sharks with frickin' laser beams. Is it too much to ask?" Well, we've got some really nasty bass. Do they have laser beams? But, you know, that whole Dr. Evil routine, and I tweeted it, and I think I mentioned it on the show Thursday. And lo and behold, I guess it was Friday's Rachel Maddow show. She featured John Racy under the under the headline "Sharks with Frickin' Laser Beams." I guess everybody's in, but you just sort of because when you tweet something like that, you know, on the Twitter, when you tweet something like that, you never know where it's going to land. You never know who's listening. So, Rachel or your staffer or whatever, if you are paying it, we just love you. We just love you. And admire and adore you and all of you and love the program and there. So, yeah. But it was kind of fun. It was kind of fun to see that happen. But I'm shilly-shallying about way too much because, you know, it's Moran Monday. And like I said, I think we've got a harmonic bozo convergence going on. Let's get this thing started. Yeah, there it is. I do so love Calliope music. Somebody tell Anderson Cooper. There we go. Yes, indeed. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, step right up, step off the midway. So step away from the pick up the duck. Step away from the throw the ping pong ball in the goldfish bowl. Step away. Come over here. Get over here. Hurry, hurry, hurry. You cannot tell your morons without a program. And this is the program for telling your morons. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. For a little more than $10 a month, that's less than 5 cents an hour for this program, you can have before you all the morons you would ever want to see. Mean morons, stupid morons, ignorant morons, almost routinely all of them Republican voting morons. Right here behind this imaginary thin screen of canvas are moran exemplars, the likes of which you have never seen. Step right up. Step right up. Come in. You will be up to your armpits in morans. And no one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes we ask pregnant women and small children not to enter, for the morans are, in fact, terrifying and illegal to behold in some civilized jurisdictions. Hurry, hurry, hurry. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Oh, yes, it is. And you know what? I want to offer you my first Moran nominee, although I'm sure you will have your own. Here's a hint. If you're sitting around, you know, kind of staring at your shoelaces, you done run out of the natural light, the last 12-pack you could afford with the change you scraped out of your pocket. If you're sitting around and somebody comes up and says, "Hey, I've got some natural light. Look, I've got a couple of jugs of Mad Dog 2020 and a bag of oregano that I'm going to tell you is marijuana. Let's catch a buzz." If somebody does that, and let's say you all happen to live in Newburgh, New York, and after a while, you've been sitting there playing quarter bounce with your free natural light that your new friend has done brought along, and you're smoking that oregano and wondering why you feel more like you're in a spaghetti factory than, you know, catching any sort of a buzz. But, you know, roll another one by all means. You know, the new friend orders out for pizza, that kind of thing. And then, you know, the several natural lights into the affair, one of them says, "You know what?" And we've seen this before, haven't we? There's another scenario where the new friend brings basketballs and high-top tennis shoes. But if your new buddy who brought you the natural light and the bag of oregano and the two bottles of Mad Dog 2020 looks around, makes sure your eyes are nice and red, and it's all nice and oregano smoky in the room, and says, "You know what would be a good idea? Let's shoot rockets at airplanes and blow up synagogues." Well, this is an essential test of moran-ness, you understand. Because, well, it's just, a word to the wise is sufficient, right? I mean, you're sitting there, and you got your nice little face on with your natural light, and let's blow up some synagogues and shoot down some airplanes. Well, that's what happened back in 2009 in New York. Newburgh, New York. Don't have my map handy, so I'm not quite sure where Newburgh is. But if somebody comes along and says something stupid like that to you, here's a hint. That's when you realize that you've been sitting there swilling natural light with an FBI agent. Because those are the only people, well, except for right-wing terrorists, who really aren't touched that often. I mean, you know, why? You know, we wouldn't want to stop the ones that actually want to do any harm in the United States. Let's go see if we can gin up some, you know, some phony Muslim horror mongers. The only people running around the United States these days saying, hey, let's go shoot down planes and blow up synagogues, are FBI agents. And we found that out today, as a matter of fact, as a jury returned a verdict in New York, in Manhattan, Federal District Court in Manhattan, 8 days worth of deliberation, a jury of 6 women and 5 men, as reported by the New York Times. 4 men convicted in plot to bomb synagogues. Damn. That's, well, this is kind of a Moran nomination for the New York Times, too. 4 men convicted in plot to bomb synagogues, the only problem being that there was no plot to bomb synagogues except for the plot that the FBI agent hatched. Hey, boss, I got, any, you ever see the Rick Moranis and Steve Martin in My Blue Heaven? And Rick Moranis is an FBI agent who's tired of doing desk work and he wants to get out and do a stakeout, you know, do a real sting operation. Because I guess they get bored. And so, you know, you can see the agent Snarfbuckle sitting there and his belly's getting bigger, hanging over his belt more and more. Hey, boss, I got an idea for a sting. What do you say I go get me a case of Natural Light and a couple of bottles of MD 2020 and go wandering around in Newburgh, New York, and see if I can find somebody who wants to blow up some synagogues and maybe shoot at a couple of airplanes with a bottle rocket? Why, that's a great idea. Go! Because that's what happened. Now, I'm making up the part about the MD 2020 and the natural light. Although I'm sure if we dig far enough, we'll find that too. People stupid enough to do this are generally stupid enough to do the rest of it. Yeah, 6 women, 5 men in the jury. What happened to 12? 6 and 5 still 11, isn't it? Well, except in certain jurisdictions like where Christine O'Donnell is, where she says local communities should make up the rules of, you know, things like whether or not evolution is real or climate change or mathematics or the gas laws or right, but you get the idea. A jury of 11 convicted 4 defendants by the names of Anta Williams, Laguerre Payen, James Cromitty, and David Williams IV. And they're all facing up to life in prison. Mr. Williams and Mr. Payen were acquitted of one charge, that charge being attempting to kill officers and employees of the United States, in which case 11 jurors, even jurors, in a federal trial. Now, bear in mind, the federal law is wholly geared toward convictions. They did get off on the charge of attempting to kill officers and employees of the United States, mainly because they didn't. I know that's a really wild-eyed sort of reason for a jury to acquit, but they didn't. Now, I'm not saying that these are nice people. In fact, I'm nominating them on Moran Monday as morans. Sitting around scratching yourself, you know, watching Dancing with the Stars, and hey, kids, I got an idea. Let's blow up some synagogues and shoot at some airplanes. Cool. No. They were arrested in the Riverdale section of the Bronx on May the 20th, 2009, after they planted the fake bombs in cars outside 2 synagogues. Then they were going to go to Stewart International Airport in Newburgh, north of New York City. New York City, yes. And they were going to fire fake missiles at military transport planes. Preet Bharara is the United States attorney in Manhattan. And Preet Bharara said, homegrown terrorism is a serious threat, and today's convictions affirm our commitment to do everything we can to protect against it including making crap up. No, he didn't say that part. Or she. I don't know. Preet. I don't know. The defendants in this case agreed to plant bombs and use missiles they thought were very real weapons of terrorism. Sounds like certainly it sounds like it could fall under a conspiracy, but an actual crime? Because the whole thing, it's not like... You know, of course, the feds had hours and hours and hours of conversations between an informer by the name of Shahed Hussein and the defendants. The informer was the Fed. Mr. Cromitty did most of the talking. Mr. Cromitty also is apparently an egotistical, braggadocious loudmouth, and he said a lot of anti-Semitic things, which, again, mark him as a moron. And he talked a lot about, you know, wanting to commit violent acts, as the New York Times said. Yeah, I'm going to bust a cap in somebody. You know that. But then he also voiced doubts about his intentions. Yeah, sure, I'd like to do it, but, you know, I ain't got no bombs. So the whole defense was based on entrapment because the whole case was based on entrapment. But it's America. It's America, and in a federal court, everybody knows that a federal prosecutor can, upon nothing more than his desire or hers, indict a ham sandwich. And apparently we've gotten in 2010 to the point where not only can the prosecutor indict the ham sandwich, the prosecutor can now convict the ham sandwich, and we'd probably better make it turkey just to keep everybody happy all the way around. It's a turkey sandwich now. Oh, one of the jurors got dismissed because the juror had seen behind the curtain, had seen an inadmissible transcript of recordings. Alicia Williams McCollum is one of the defendant's aunt, and she said, this case should never have happened. You come into a small, isolated urban community to do your wickedness. We have been used, and nobody cares. Well, of course not. Because now the Justice Department will say, see? See, by God, see? We've done protected you from the terrorists. The only problem was there weren't any, except the ones that were being paid by the FBI. So just, you know, a note to the morons out there. You want to sit around and fulminate, oh, it's the Jews, oh, it's the Muslims. Shh, don't tell anybody. It's the white people. I'm a white guy, I know. It's the white people. But you want to sit around and say, it's the Jews, it's the Muslims, it's the women's, it's the gays, it's the... When somebody knocks on your door and says, you know, I agree, and what we need to do is drink some natural light and some MD-2020, smoke some oregano, and plant some phony bombs. What do you say? When you say, great idea, that's when you become a... One, two, three... Moran! The jurors did reveal that they had seen evidence that was not introduced at trial, including that transcript. But the federal judge, Colleen McMahon, refused a mistrial motion. She just dismissed the juror and told the other jurors to get back to work so that there were 11 instead of 12. And now at least we understand how that happened and buried at the bottom of the story. Oh, God. It's just... Because, see, we do have a terrorism problem in America. But it's not... This is not the terrorism problem. The terrorism problem... The terrorism problem has to do with guys who like to go and shoot up the Tides Foundation. The terrorism problem has to do with all sorts of disaffected white folks who want to... Well, I don't want to make it no money. I don't want to have no mosque. That's where we have a terrorism problem. I'm going to kill the liberals. Those are our terrorism problem. But you know what? Emery and Eileen will sleep better at night if they think that the government done out there that the making protecting us from the Muslims. And by the way, this was of course Eric Holder's Justice Department. This was the Southern District of New York Court in Manhattan, right? Right. Well, U.S. Attorney Eric Holder does want you to know that he is by God on the job, and he is going to protect America from bogus, phony, baloney terrorists and from, oh, sit down, Marvelline, it's terrifying, law-abiding citizens of California. Story goes back a couple of days. Less than 3 weeks before California voters hit the polls, the Justice Department issued a preemptive message concerning a ballot measure making worldwide headlines. Quote, Attorney General Eric Holder says that the federal government will enforce its marijuana laws in California even if the state's voters approve a ballot measure to legalize the drug. Here are the exact words of Attorney General Eric Holder. We will vigorously enforce the CSA against those individuals and organizations that possess, manufacture, or distribute marijuana for recreational use, even if such activities are permitted under state law. You got that, California voters? The Obama administration has said screw you in your voting. It doesn't matter what you want. Right? Yeah. If you vote to legalize the marijuana, the cannabis, the hemp, if you do that in California, President Obama and Attorney General Holder want you to know that they're going to bring down the full weight of the United States federal government on your dope-smoking ass. Because that's what we've got to do to protect our freedom. Freedom ain't free. Now, that's not me making stuff up. That's for real. We will vigorously... And this is from a letter. This isn't just, you know, sitting there talking at the end of the bar. The Associated Press, Pete Yost, reporting... that Holder made the comments in a letter to former chiefs of the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration. And the letter, dated this past Wednesday, says, we will vigorously enforce the CSA against those individuals and organizations that possess, manufacture, or distribute marijuana for recreational use, even if such activities are permitted under state law. So let's review. We've got birchers, baggers, deathers, tenthers, booger eaters running around the country wanting to see not only the birth certificate now, but wanting to see the DNA evidence that Barack Obama is not the love child of Malcolm X. Oh, we've got people running around with guns who are right-wingers and have been fully weaponized by the likes of Glenn Beck and Alex Jones. Yeah. And the Obama Justice Department responds by saying they're going to get those dirty criminal pot smokers. Nice to see we've got our priorities all squared away. Even if such activities are permitted under state law. Right. I don't know if you saw this one story. I thought it was kind of cute, at least. President Not Sure is going to go on the hit TV series Mythbusters. It'll be shown on December the 8th. He's going to use the segment to encourage kids to study their math and science, because there's lots of math and science in MythBusters. And it's an episode about the siege of Syracuse, around 214 B.C. See, I'm not the only one that likes to wander around in ancient history. And the MythBusters guys are going to try to find out if Archimedes really could have set fire to some ships at a remote distance using mirrors and magnifying glasses or something. The story in the New York Times' The Caucus by Michael D. Shear says, producers of the television series are not saying exactly how Mr. Obama will help prove or disprove that myth. Well, I know. I know. Because, see, I'm all plugged into teabagging world. What they're going to do, Jamie and that other, Adam and Jamie, is that it? Adam and Jamie? Jamie and Adam? What they're going to do is they're going to use mirrors and magnifying glasses to burn up Barack Obama at a distance. They're going to use mirrors and magnifying glasses at a distance to burn up Barack Obama's genuine Kenyan birth certificate. And then the last evidence will be gone. Mm-hmm. And it's all going to be under the guise of teaching the little children to like their math and science when everybody knows they ought to be in church. God Almighty. Oh, I think we're off and running. It's another one of those nights. Head for the hills. You'll be up to your armpits in morans. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. I'm Bob.
Your eyes were open wide. Passenger side.
24 minutes before the hour, that, of course, Wilco, from a genuinely wonderful, wonderful album called AM from, I guess 10 or more years ago, Passenger Side. You could just sort of see the folks talking to the informant, couldn't you? Yeah. It is Moran Monday on the Horn, and we go straight to the phones. You know the number, by the way, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel. It's 304-658-3333, and email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, so what did you do? You went to a cooking contest?
Well, it was kind of a chili cook-off fest sort of thing.
Oh, okay. And then how'd your chili do? What place did you come in?
I don't know. I don't think I placed. But it was. I still got a lot of compliments, and that's what matters. And had more fun than I've had in a long time.
Well, yeah, well, it sounded good what you were making. You're doing everything from scratch. Yum, yum.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? It was. And no, you know, except for the people who said, Jesus, this is hot. Well, hell, it's chilly, honey. You know, except for the, no complaints.
Well, so that article you sent me, that was a bit, the American New Poor.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was crazy. But, I mean, it's so harsh, but... it's hard to disagree with.
Well, you know, it's from The Guardian, America's New Poor, The End of the Middle Class Dream by Paul Mason. And basically it starts out just chronicling any given day outside the Home Depot, people trying to get work.
Oh, God. You know, I love the little sort of issues between the blacks and the oblivious Latinos. That's always nice.
Well, you know, there's never been a time in American history, Sandra, when divide and conquer hasn't just worked famously.
Oh, I know, but I just was like, oh dear goodness. But I don't really know this reporter, but I mean, I sent you that other one that was Jeffrey Sachs, who was going on about, you know, the moral crisis of ignoring the poor in this country. Did you get a chance to read that one?
I got to browse it, and...
Well, the only reason why I sent it to you was it's Jeffrey Sachs, the architect of the destruction of Russia after the Soviet Union fell. I mean, he was this sort of hotshot economist, you know, Mr. Neoliberal, gotta save the poor around the world with, you know, my horrible neoliberal beliefs. So it's just like, what happened to you? You know. Because he's preaching this other song and dance, but after what he did to Poland, and you know, he needs to, yeah, this ain't gonna do it. He got to cough up more than this.
But it's you know, as usual, it just retreaded old. Well, hey, look, it screwed them. It'll screw us.
Yeah, well, I guess he's sort of trying to turn the page. But I when I saw it was Jeffrey Sachs, I just thought, oh no. And since we're on these economists, I have to say, I was just laughing at Paul Krugman. He definitely got issues with China, but you know, I have one thing to say to Mr. Krugman. You missed the class on realism.
How so?
Krugman, you missed the class. I mean, you know, he's sort of criticizing China for behaving like the beggar thy neighbor hegemonic nightmare that will happen. I mean, that's how states operate. It's self-preservation, and I'm gonna get mine. I mean, I don't know. You know,
right? And you know, that's present in the fact that most nations protect their economies.
Well, the thing, yeah. So it's sort of, and it's. I mean, I understand what he's saying. I mean, what he's saying is absolutely true. But the sort of hand-wringing, you know, I can do without. It's like, oh, no, this is how nation states work, especially if you eliminate the hegemonic power of the U.S. that's been controlling shit for the last half a century. As that disintegrates, you know, you may have a leveling, but that's not necessarily good. If you remember the great powers in Europe, you know what happened there?
Yeah.
Everything is equal. that's not necessarily a good thing. Because let's be honest, China, yeah, whatever, they have almost a billion peasants. Hello. So unless that standard of living is brought up, there's only so far China can go. I understand that people get all exercised, but you really got to look at that factor with China and India.
Well, and but in America's heyday, weren't we doing something similar to what China's doing now?
Well, yeah.
Sucking up all the world's resources, the taking advantage of incredibly cheap labor.
Right.
All of the above.
And the whole idea of us, you know, letting go of the rare earth manufacturing that we had here, okay, yeah, but to be honest, I'm not interested in all the pollution. You know, there's always two sides to a story. Because that rare earth shit, that ain't no joke as far as the byproduct of getting that shit.
No, you have to do really nasty things
right.
to get it.
So, I mean, you know, before we go off the deep end about how China's behaving, you know, you got to look at power politics and real politics. You know, you can't, Krugman, don't pretend that the U.S. hasn't been operating with this sort of hegemonic theory and actions since World War II. And now you don't think the U.S. is going to use its status as reserve currency to its max? Oh, yes. I mean, the U.S. is in trouble, but trust and believe that they can fuck up shit with the currency.
Oh, that's the last leverage that we have, isn't it?
Well, yeah, exactly. But the thing is, the China thing is, you know, it is something to look at. It's something to behold because it's been so quick. The thing about China has been so rapid, what's going on there. But, you know, don't forget the population. China has to have a balance of keeping people working or that shit can come apart quick. Because there ain't no democracy. It's you know, authoritarian capitalism.
You know, there's 5,000 years worth of history of people becoming disaffected and then toppling the government.
Well, and also, it's just a real balancing act. So for them to, you know, the trigger happiness of how they behave, yeah, no, it is a bit of a worry. It's like, yikes, thin skin much? But to pretend that we're all in this kind of, you know, cooperative type of multilateralism.
Oh, it's the global village.
God. You know, it's like, no, the only reason why we had that sort of stuff going on is because we had a hegemonic power, the U.S., which may look to be a bit more benign because they want to make money, because that's always been what America has been about. All their conquests has been to open markets, like the Romans. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and if you have to, and like the Romans, if you have to do it with the barrel of a gun, you'll do that. Was it Commodore Perry that sailed into Tokyo Bay and said, "You will open your doors and trade with us, or we will give you a carpet of artillery shells"?
Right. There is no sort of cultural. I mean, there is, but it's not like the French. You know, it's a whole different kind of colonialism. You know, with Alexander Hamilton. You know, the whole markets. If you look at the U.S., it's always been about that. I mean, why do you think South America is in such a tip for so long? You know what I mean? But we're working on a Guatemalan model for ourselves right now, though.
Oh, Jesus. And you know, you almost want to chuckle at America on the new Guatemala plan.
Well, because, you know, it's a third of the people controlling everything, and then there's two-thirds of the rest of them people ain't got squat, and that's the motto we working towards quick.
Yeah, and as David in Tennessee's noting, these moments of history getting repeated, it seems like there's less time between repetitions now so that it's harder to... It's harder to pick up the pieces after each individual collapse.
Yeah, well, now this is a big one though because you know the sort of the idea of the U.S. declining as a hegemon is a real worry. Just for the fact that I'm saying, when you get this sort of leveling out, no matter if it's a short amount of time, world wars come out of shit like that. Okay.
Well, yeah, they do.
You know,
I'm thinking of the first one, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, the first one, you know, and everyone's all whatever, and there's so many different, this currency tit for tat that's going on is something that's also worrying me as far as history goes. In the last depression, yeah, was sort of tariffs and trade, but this currency stuff can be the same type of deal.
Well, because it has the potential and the ability to put pressures on nations that they can't tolerate short of starting shooting.
Well, no, yeah, because you can't export your way out of this mess. You see what I mean? Because with the whole beggar thy neighbor, okay, yeah, you lower your currency in the hopes of...
And Sandra, don't we have, in a way, don't we have lessons of that internally, domestically here? With the tax deals that got, I mean, look at GM and the Saturn plant down in Spring Hill, Tennessee. You know, that was going to bring prosperity and frisbees and wheat checks to that neck of the woods, and now not so much.
Right, it's a race to the bottom.
And that's the whole thing. Spring Hill got that because they raced to the bottom.
Right, but see, you have to understand that. Nation states, you know, this whole sort of redefining is going on because you can't ignore the new non-state actors. And I don't mean Al-Qaeda. I mean FISA. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Or transnational corporations. I mean, they're non-state actors as well.
Well, those are the only non-state actors that I'm talking about are these, MNCs, as they call them, multinational corporations. You know, they are controlling so much power. But I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get off on this. But
I want to go one place with you real quick before we go away from it. And that is the fact that you know me, I'm all self-centered, and I think the there's no world outside of Appalachia. But you know, we've got one of those little models going on here. We're a lab rat because, you know, for a long time I griped about the fact that, you know, we blow up mountains here and poison communities and destroy communities and make children sick and all of that, so that Don Blankenship can keep putting toxic coal on barges to send it to China, right? And, you know, that I guess, you know, the argument is, well, at least that's keeping the trade deficit down a little bit. Imagine what it'd be without Don's coal. But now we've reached a place where not only are we doing that, which makes Massey Energy an intermediary for the Chinese, but, a Russian firm came in here and bought up a bunch of metallurgical companies, and they run it directly now, Sandra. So that they've got ready access to metallurgical coal for the Russian steel industry. And what's more, now if you go over to eastern Kentucky, lo and behold, Indian firms own it. And what I'm getting at, I think, is the fact that, you know, all transnationals did not begin in the United States. And they do not necessarily occur in the United States. And what goes one way goes the other. So that, for instance, you know, you've got Indian and Russian firms controlling coal interests in Appalachia, and you can't help but wondering, I wonder if any of their money goes to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. But the biggest problem with that is the whole idea that... and I hate to use this term because it makes me cringe because how the Republicans use it, but the whole rule of law is crumbling in this country. You know, this whole sanctity of contracts, all that stuff is going out the window. So I'm kind of, I'm scared when it starts breaking down at that level because all these multinationals gobbling up everything here. You know, making our lives more miserable, and there's no accountability, not even fake electoral accountability? Yikes.
Oh, I know. And it's, but by the same token, you know, we are what are we, 3 weeks out from the election? 2 weeks out? 10 days? I don't know. 10 days probably. From the election, and we're still talking about it as though, we've gotten to the point in this country where we talk about politics the same way that we talk about the Super Bowl.
Well, and it's absurd because, you know, because the original meaning of politics is, you know, like, well, not one of the meanings, you know, who gets what, when, and how. I mean, this is real life. This shit is for real. That's why I'm always amazed by people I know. Oh, Sandra, you know, I don't know why you think about these things so much and, you know, politics, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, politics is going to bite your ass, idiot. I don't say that, but this is what I'm thinking in my head. You know, these people who exist as if it doesn't touch them, you know? Please.
And I mean, but you're right. They have real world consequences. David in Tennessee just cluing me in. That Spring Hill plant, that Saturn plant I mentioned, that's in Murray County, Tennessee. And he's telling me the Murray County school system is hanging on by a thread as we speak. The county and the school board are $1 million apart. The board wants 76, and the county commission is firm at 75. And he says, not kidding, countywide school shutdown imminent. And he said it's a direct outgrowth of the deals that were made 15 years ago to get the GM Saturn plant there. But the funny thing is, all those workers who have left the county, well, they don't pay taxes there anymore. And so what you see is an internalized version of the sort of mercantilist practices that the United States has engaged in for so long, and these, you know, these MNCs, TNCs, transnationals, multinationals, whatever. See, I think of them as transnational, not multi. Because to be multinational assumes that you have some national allegiance somewhere. And no corporation does. And so practiced with it, you know, the whole idea of we'll ship the jobs to Guatemala until the Guatemalans want too much money, and then we'll ship the job from Guatemala to China, and then we'll ship the job from China. That's all been going on in the United States for the past 30 years.
Well, the thing is that's really disturbing this country is the sort of decoupling from a huge portion of the U.S. In fact, you have this fake knowledge-based bullshit that they've been trying to sell us, and you have 30% of the population, roughly, that has, say, bachelor degrees or more, right?
Right.
And then you have 70%. What's going on with them, Bob?
Are they part of that group that... Of which 30% are high school dropouts in America now?
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you're looking at this whole post-industrial gibberish, you look at the structure in this country, you got 70% of the people who aren't interested, not attached at all to higher education, yet you're being fed that that's the way to make things better. I'm sorry, that's 70%. What's happening with those folks?
They're not going to. We're going to keep wondering what's happening with those folks, Sandra, until those folks start making a sufficient amount of noise to merit being paid attention to. I suppose.
Well, and don't get me wrong. I'm just using those.
I don't.
Because I know, you know. I mean, I'm just saying that always sticks in my mind. Because I'm like, oh, okay. I thought education was the way up and out. But you're telling me that 70% of our country. It's high school or less. So I'm just sort of missing it.
Well, but I think that's a reflection of the realities of the American business model, isn't it? I mean, you really don't want people sitting around, walking around stocking shelves at the local Wort Mart thinking about Thucydides.
No, exactly. But see, what that lends to, though, is that you still need to come up with a way of occupying people's time.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're touching on stuff that is all in, I think, very much salient to Joe Bajan's new book. I haven't seen that it's come out in the U.S. It's on U.K. Amazon as Rainbow Pie.
Mm.
And one of the central tenets, it's sort of an autobiography. It's a sort of a memoir. And he talks about the rural, country, agrarian subsistence background from which his people sprang. But then he starts talking about the fact that all those people were sucked off the farms, sucked into the burbs, to do the new jobs of the post-World War II economy. And now those jobs are gone, and we've got nothing, we've got absolutely nothing for them to do. And so, you know, the big screen TVs and you know, your 1,000th channel on the cable network proliferate.
No, I mean, and the thing is that what's really disturbing is, you know, they could, for example, invest something useful like investing $1 trillion in solar, $1 trillion in nanotechnology. Because the only thing that's going to change here is to create a new industrialized type policy, be it with the clean energy thing or the sort of nano, you know, just the sort
right
of
stuff, and hopefully stuff that has to stay here.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You create a product here that the world wants to buy yet again.
Well, but did you happen to notice? And this would be months ago, when Beckerhead was encouraging people to go and shoot at the Tides Foundation, and you know somebody find hunt and kill George Soros and all of the stuff that he does. One of the people that he blackboarded on his little chalkboard there was something called the Apollo Alliance. Are you familiar with them?
What's that?
Well, this was an idea based organization that was signed on to by a whole bunch of other organizations that said, listen, you know, we can put 4.5, 5, 6, 7, 8 million people to work in America almost immediately simply by determining that we are going to get serious, among other things, about a passenger rail in the United States and about upgrading our freight rail. And, but, you know, and that's that kind of, you know, if you're going to spend $1 trillion, spend it on something worthwhile that you were just arguing for a minute ago, Sandra. But of course, the rodeo clown has already declared that to be communism.
Well, no, but see, the problem is that we'll get back to what I said before with the status that we have as a reserve currency is a precious status. You understand? So if you're able, you need to leverage that now, because it's probably a short window of this left. And I'm serious about trillion here, trillion there. I mean, that's it. That's the only
Well, right.
Way.
I mean, I remember hearing when we went to war against Iraq that one of the underlying reasons was this fact that Saddam Hussein had floated the idea that maybe it was time to shift the base currency of the bourse from the dollar to the euro. And that would have severely affected that reserve currency status, would it not?
Oh yeah, no, all that because all the sort of commodities, you know, are dealt in dollar denominations. I mean, especially oil, you know. So yeah, and also all our arms sales. It's like Israel gets X amount of dollars, but looky, they got to spend X amount of dollars buying weapons from the U.S. in dollar denominations, you know. So. I mean, the U.S. don't mess around if you look closely at what we do. But what we also do is screw huge percentages of our population. This is my problem.
Right. I mean, it kind of goes without saying that we're willing to screw the rest of the world, but when we're at the point where we're willing to screw our own...
Yeah, and I'm just speaking in terms of, like, I'm always amazed by, you know, our shenanigans around the world. And it's just like, just the reserve currency status is not going to last forever, Bob. That's the thing. And when that goes...
Well, especially in light of the fact, and I don't want to get all, you know, paleo or anything, but in light of the fact that our status as a reserve currency, the currency itself is predicated on its existence as a fiat currency.
Well, yeah, backed by...
Full faith and credit.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's just...
Not backed by, you know, gold or silver or cacao beans.
So I just think, you know, bubble munch?
There you go. Oh, that may be the line of the night, bubble munch?
You know, it's like, yeah. I understand that it's an interesting hedge. It's a little bit more interesting of a hedge at, say, 800, but double. And now people are talking about, oh, it's going to go to 5. No. It's kind of bubblicious at 13 at this point.
And yet every commercial says there's never been a better time to buy.
Well, I don't know. You know, I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, right. And you and I, I want to buy, say, $10,000 worth of gold. You know what the markup is for us peons?
Oh.
It's the rip. If I want to go buy $10,000 worth, I want $10,000 worth. But that's not what's going to happen.
No. If gold's trading at, you know, if gold's trading at $1,300 an ounce and you go to buy $10,000 worth of gold, you're not going to get the just short of 10 ounces of gold. You're going to get 5 ounces of gold, and there's going to be a whole lot of tax tag, title, and dealer prep between you and it.
And it might be some filler. You never know about the actual, I mean, so anyway, this sort of precious market mania, you know, I don't have the money to buy it anyway, but I'm looking at it and thinking, it's got that tulip.
Look at these tulips. Yeah, or for the modernists in the audience, it's got a kind of a Beanie Baby feeling about it.
Well, I know, don't get me wrong. I do think that the way the dollar is behaving, yeah, I can see why people would flee to gold. But I don't know.
You know what? This is it's funny though that you mentioned the idea of a debased currency. And debasing the coinage, you know, there might be some filler in that stuff. Because, you know, lo and behold, I had that story about how the president not sure is going to go on Mythbusters.
Now, what is that? See, I'm lost. Am I missing something?
Well, he wants to encourage children to study math and science. And so where better to do that than where, you know, on a show where they shoot shoot projectiles into gelatin bodies. I don't know.
Your imitation. It's hilarious. Sorry.
Well, it's not close, but it's not good, but it's close, and it's kind of fun to do once in a while.
Yeah, he's, you know, it's kind of difficult, but
well, it's just hard to talk that boring. You know, W was fun to do because there was you got to do a lot of snickering and shit, you know.
Yeah, something entertaining. No, so he's going to go on that show.
And they're going to test Archimedes, the story of Archimedes burning down the fleets at Syracuse with giant reflecting mirrors.
Oh.
Which is cool, but the thing is, when you mentioned gold, I immediately flashed on it, and I thought it might even, it might actually be, because there's another Archimedes experiment out there. That I remember learning about as a schoolboy, Sandra. Archimedes is the guy who discovered the concept of specific gravity. And the way the story is told, the king of wherever had received a new crown, and it was supposed to be solid gold, and he wanted to make sure that it was solid gold, but he didn't know how to make sure it was solid gold without sawing it in half, which kind of ruins it as a crown. And so he gets hold of Archimedes, and he says, "Can you figure this out?" And Archimedes says, "Well, let me go soak in the bath for a little bit, and I'll get back to you." And that's the story of Archimedes leaping out of the bath, running naked through the streets of Athens or where the hell ever, screaming, "Eureka! Eureka!" which means, "I've figured it out, I've figured it out." And he figured out that, you know, everything has its own specific gravity. That if the specific gravity of the crown was, you know, if it was filled with iron and plated with gold, it would have a higher specific gravity than if it was solid gold or, you know, whatever. I forget the exact specific. But I flashed on that, Sandra, because maybe a little moment of learning about math and science in that way might help President Not Sure in terms of figuring out what a dadgum dodge all this globalism BS is in the first place. Never mind burning down ships. Let's learn about debasing the currency.
Oh, I know. And did you hear? I just saw it that Bank of America, you know, about to go back season homes again.
Oh yeah, yeah. Because it was yesterday. Was it yesterday that the Obama's HUD guy went on one of the Sunday shows and said, "Oh, having a general moratorium on foreclosures until we can figure out what these fraudulent bastards are doing, that would be terrible for the economy."
Yeah, no, so that was like the
so that was kind of a little green flag waved at Bank of America and the rest of the thugs, right, wasn't it?
That's what that was. I mean, it's just incredible. You know, and then people wonder why, you know, the base is sort of gone. I mean, you know, how much kicking can you get?
And that's, you know, I think that's the floor they're trying to find. How long can we kick these people until they start objecting to being kicked?
But, you know, I mean, because I always like to read the comments, and the thing that kills me is that how many people are like, "Oh, good, so they can, you know, get those deadbeats and You know, the whole
Well, Daryl Issa has already... Daryl Issa announced, and you know what a thug he is, in the House of Representatives, announced in the last few days that, by God, if the Republicans take control, we're going to investigate those no-good losing bastards who got mortgages who didn't deserve them. We're certainly not going to investigate the banks.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just incredible, and it's like sort of... Yeah, anyway, and I'll let you go, but I'm just sort of, you know, of course I'm waiting, I'm holding my breath with the CAC Food Commission, and this whole lame duck Congress seems like it's going to be way up north and off the hook. I got to get some popcorn.
You know, don't, yeah, get, yeah, with the butter.
Oh, my God. Well, anyway, hey, got to say, how do you think San Diego's feeling right about now? What's up with LT? What's going on?
Well, yeah, there's that, and just, you know, who would have imagined that some of the best football yesterday would take place between 2-1-3 teams? You know, watching the Sturm und Drang emanating from the Taj Mahal in Dallas.
Oh, listen, that situation, if I had to look at Tony Romo with a hat, you know, he need to sit down. That's bad. I don't know what's going on. Jerry need to get some more face work, I think.
Yeah, that's the Taj Mahal Jones, isn't it? Or the Terry Mahal, or I haven't figured out what we're going to call that thing yet.
But the fact that his team is, I mean, how much did he sucker everybody out for that thing? Is it like a billion or something?
Big. Delightful. Sandra, you have yourself a great evening, dear.
Talk to you soon.
All right, later. Bye now. Off to a roaring start on this Moran Monday. It is 8 minutes past the hour. We'll take a quick break and come back. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn.
There was a Joe leaning on the back door. A couple Jills that had their eyes on a couple bills, and I was stating they was waiting to get their hands on some easy money. They flip a dime once, and I'll tell you if this time, one step up, one step back, one loosen the shoulder strap. She couldn't see, her knees got weak. Oh, she could almost taste it. Easy money. There was this old black cow was sending an old black Cadillac. And Joe smelled sweet, so she curls up her boyfriend's feet. She says, I got a plan. Listen, Sam, how's about to make some of that easy money? Oh, you say yes. Oh, yes. Just tell me what you want me to do. She said, baby, you can trust me. Oh, baby, but you must be hiding in my room at the quarter to. Well, the cat told the boy, come on up to the room and play with my toys, honey. But the Jill had set the bait, and she wasn't going to sit around and wait. But this guy was wise to all of the lies, and he flies out the door with easy money. Oh, because there ain't no man who got the money in his hand, got any of that bread by being a slow in the head. The easier it looks, the harder it hooks. There ain't no such thing. Money, we say yeah, oh yeah.
wasn't clear, but I hear that somebody was looking for some easy money.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Well, 12 minutes past the hour, and before we go back to the phones, and you know the numbers, right? 877-443-2366 or direct dial 304-658-3333 if you want to save us the toll-free charges. If you've got something that pays for your long distance, if you, you know, if you don't, it's okay. You can use the toll free line. You know, we're all buddies around here, right? Yeah, exactly. You know how it works. So now I want to hit this one before I, because it's so absolutely stunning. There's no way we can get out of Moran Monday without mentioning a story like this, and that is the. A couple of things. Let's go to the mailbag first. I like to keep up with the stuff that you guys are offering through the course of the show because a lot of times you have more to offer than I do. Ron in Raleigh, at my mention of Attorney General Holder's promise to vigorously enforce the marijuana laws, Ron says, how about vigorously enforcing the antitrust laws, the banking fraud laws, the war crimes laws? And he says, this bunch are getting on my last nerve, and I understand that. It's so frustrating, because it seems like, you know, there's better ways to spend our resources and our time. And that's just, you know, stuff that you kind of, you know, learn in grade school. You know, what are you doing? Isn't there something, don't you have homework to do? Remember that? Sure you do. Kate writing in with a bit of an accusation, talking about what I said, my lead-off Moran Monday story. You have led such a sheltered life. You sounded as if Mad Dog 2020 is something for insane lowlifes, casting disparaging remarks about Plum Purple. The very idea. I thought it was Plum Supreme. And no, not as sheltered as you think. The problem with Mad Dog 2020 is you buy the bottle sane, and you finish the bottle insane. We liked to mix it with Sprite or 7-Up because we were, you know, I guess we were, wimps that way, couldn't take it straight. And then ice cold. But anyway, Kate says, that takedown, the one in New York, sounded like something that should have happened in Arkansas up in the woods. The old white boys, your quote, are keeping the terrorists on the front burner to keep us scared, to keep us from seeing what is really going on behind the curtain. Election time, bank closures, and unemployment's a grand opportunity for them. They have divided us, says Kate, but good, covering us with fecal material here in the dark, dank basement. Welcome to our life, and this is my comment, welcome to our life as a mushroom. Exactly. John writing in says, you slayed me with the bit on the teabaggers burning Obama's birth certificate with Archimedes' solar weapon. The only problem is they'd never be able to figure out which side of the mirror to stand on. Yeah, but it'd be fun to watch, more fun to watch that way, wouldn't it? But I wonder, says John, if we could just convince them to all go off and look for the golden fleece somewhere. That should keep them occupied for a couple of years, long enough to have another election or two in peace. And this story that John Fox sent along. And I had it in the stack, and I do want to make sure I get to it before I go back to the phones, because it's so ridiculous that you can't. Well, that word believe is so damn dangerous in the first place now, isn't it? You can't believe that in 2010 people are behaving this way, but in 2010 people are behaving this way. And the only way I can explain it is to note that Alabama and Alaska all start, they both start with the same first three letters, and they share more in common than that. This past weekend, there was a candidate event in Alaska, in Anchorage, at Central Middle School. And as you might surmise, it was attended by members of the media. One of those members of the media was a guy named Tony Hopfinger. And you know what Tony Hopfinger did? Now, he works for the Alaska Dispatch. The Alaska Dispatch is a real-live, honest-to-God journalism operation. And Tony Hopfinger is a real-live, honest-to-goodness reporter. In fact, he's the editor of the Alaska Dispatch. It's a for-profit, you know, real-live journalism. He tried to interview Joe Miller. Remember the guy who was measuring his drapes for his office in Washington, D.C., because he's going to be the senator? Yeah, he tried to interview Miller, and Miller's hired thugs, who have those high and tight skinhead haircuts that just let you know exactly where they... Yeah, I don't know, maybe they were Blackwater rejects. Hopfinger went to ask him, Miller, a question about why he was disciplined in a previous job. Gosh, sounds like reporter work, doesn't it? Well, not to the thugs that Miller hires. His private security guards took Hopfinger, restrained him, put him in handcuffs. What were they doing with handcuffs? And wouldn't let him go until the Anchorage Police Department showed up and told these thugs to let him go. They also took his video camera from him, and later on the segment covering the area, the span of the arrest, was found to be missing. The thug who, the copy I'm looking at says, the guard. Guard my ass! The thug who took the camera said, no, I didn't do nothing to it. He dropped it. See, he dropped it. Wouldn't give his name. How about that? He thinks he's police, but he won't give his name. So while the guy's being imprisoned, because it is an imprisonment issue, I'll explain this in a minute, other people trying to take photographs of what's going on or trying to talk to him, these thugs threaten them, too, that they'll arrest him for trespass. Got a little heated. There were some shoving matches, a little chest bumping going on, a lot of testosterone flying around, apparently. Starting to get cold in Alaska, and it probably brings that out in people. Well, I thought it would be, it is Moran Monday. And sometimes Morans have to learn lessons about the law. And in this case, these thugs, and Joe Miller, because remember, okay, first of all, there's an old legal principle called respondeat superior. That means let the employer respond and be liable for the acts of his employees. So Joe Miller's got a learning curve in front of him. It's another one of those Jesus is 2010 moments. The term false arrest is sometimes used interchangeably with that of the tort of false imprisonment. False arrest is one method of committing false imprisonment. A false arrest must be perpetrated by one who asserts that he or she is acting pursuant to legal authority. That's what these guys did. And false imprisonment is unlawful confinement. Guess what? It's a floor wax. It's a dessert topping. It's both. This is amazing. This is, if you read law and you're learning that kind of stuff, you'll read a lot of false arrest, false imprisonment stuff arising out of house detectives detaining people for shoplifting. It happens that way a lot. But this is so out there that it's not even a close call. And you just pray that Mr. Hopfinger has the stomach for the fight to go and find himself a Jim Dandy good lawyer and sue the life out of Joe Miller, because you know what? He's a candidate. He's not immune from suit. And even if he wins the election, he won't be immune, although it's looking like he may very well not. Even his opponent tweeted at him this morning, and it was kind of funny. Tweeted at Joe W. Miller. That's what he is on Twitter, Joe W. Miller. In case you were unaware, the Constitution also applies to reporters. This is amazing. Yeah, Joe Miller is being referred to as Mr. Noun, Verb, and Unconstitutional. Let's see. What has he said is unconstitutional? Minimum wages, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, unemployment benefits. And he said that child labor laws, federal child labor laws, are unconstitutional. Yeah, no kidding. Child labor laws. You know, that's the problem with that, those 70%ers that Sandra was talking about. When you think you know something but you don't really, that's when you get really, really interesting and generally pretty dangerous. Joe Miller's dangerous. Christine O'Donnell, you know, I want community standards for mathematics and science and all of that. Really? You're going to leave it up to busted knuckle Alabama to determine whether or not, oh, I don't know, water freezes at 32 degrees Fahrenheit or 0 degrees Celsius? Well, you know, it's Alabama, so there won't be no Celsius because that's communism. But congratulations to our Moran nominee, Joe Miller, and his Moran thugs. Because I would hope that they get a real close-up, in-your-face education on tort law and the tort of false imprisonment. By the way, David in Tennessee letting me know that the company from which these thugs came, get this, Drop Zone Security. Drop Zone Security. Hoo-ah! Right. And the things you guys respond to that I bring up, Ron and Raleigh, on Mad Dog 2020. Look up swill in the dictionary, and there's a picture of a bottle of Mad Dog 2020 Orange Driver. I'm reading this directly as it was written, because I'm reading this on the fly, and it just, that shit will make a jackrabbit slap a bear. That's about the size of it, too. Oh, my God. And Kate really enjoyed the Ricky Lee Jones. She's just swooning here. Oh, Ricky Lee, be still my heart. Reminds me of my Plum Purple days. He and Tom Waits. her and Tom Waits. See, there's no elitism here. Oh, no. Oh, hell no. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's John in upstate New York.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Oh, doing really good. Listen, that Joe Miller thing, man, I was flashing to our boy Paladino up here, because he doesn't need thugs to take down the media. You know, he threatens to do it himself.
Right, yeah, he's just got a ball bat, right?
Yeah, exactly. He says he's going to take him down, and the reporter's like, how are you going to take me down? And he's like, yeah, why don't you find out? You know, so it's like a...
Knock the chip off my shoulder, Andy. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not an election, it's a Sopranos episode, you know. But actually, no, that actually is why I'm calling, because, you know, folks may have thought that they had a handle on the weirdness that is the New York governor's race, but tonight, actually right now I'm recording it, I'll be watching it later, we've got the one and only candidates debate, and it is unusual because all seven candidates who are on the ballot are going to be on the stage, and they're going to have equal time for response to the questions and everything.
I was going to say that's just primed for comedy gold, isn't it?
Well, I think it is, and especially because let me tell you about a couple of the folks. You know, we got Cuomo and Paladino. We got the Green candidate, Howie Hawkins, who's a great guy. We've also got a woman named Kristen Davis. And Kristen Davis is well known probably to people outside New York because she is the woman who supplied the prostitute that brought down Eliot Spitzer's governorship here a couple years back. And she is running on...
I knew I recognized that name, yeah.
Yeah, the name was the same as the woman, although it's not... This is the madam, not the girl, right?
That's okay.
She's running on the anti-prohibition party, which is kind of one of those weird, fakey libertarian groups, like let's legalize pot and hookers, but let's make sure that those people can't build a not a mosque at not a ground zero. You know, one of those things.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
But New York has that aggregated third party voting, doesn't it, John? You know,
yeah.
where third parties can nominate some other party's candidate and that kind of thing. So it's not quite as much of an exercise in seeming futility as what it is in many other places.
No, it's not. But you get kind of bogus things like, you know, Cuomo is on the Working Families Party ballot, which is basically the Democrats, right? But they technically can nominate their own person. And there's no way that you can consider Cuomo someone who ought to be running for something called Working Families. It's just not, you know, the shoe doesn't fit, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, yeah. So we, in addition to Ms. Davis, we've got a fellow named Jimmy McMillan, who is a governor candidate. And his party is called, now brace yourself, the Rent is Too Damn High Party.
Wow. Lenient naming rules at the New York Secretary of State, right?
Yeah, there was some dispute about that. And also, it's not the word two, it's the number two. So it's too damn high, like two live crew, you know. It's good stuff. It promises to be really exciting. The thing about this is that, yeah, it's theater, it's spectacle, but, you know, the conventional wisdom is that all this crowded stage helps Cuomo. But that's really not how I read it. Because you got to understand something about Palladino, and that he's gotten where he is kind of despite all the expectations. You know, he ran in the primary against Rick Lazio, and Lazio was supposed to wipe the floor with him. You know, all the polls had him way up and all that, and then Palladino comes out and beats him. And it's just looking like kind of a similar thing from where I'm standing. You know, Cuomo's got a double-digit lead on him right now, but it has been shrinking. And when I'm...
And it'll shrink all the way to Election Day. It will.
Well, that's the thing, and I think people expect, you know, it's New York, well, people are going to hem and haw and then vote Democrat, which is the expectation, but they're just... I don't think they're reaching Palladino voters, or people are not admitting they're going to vote for him. Because I'm seeing signs 2-1 for him, even here, which is a fairly progressive part of upstate. And it's just got me a little creeped out. So to me, this looks like a ploy on Palladino's part to sort of drown out Cuomo a bit, maybe siphon off some voters. Because really, most of the people on the stage are people, I think, that would sort of ideologically draw lefties, you know?
Right, and to take away, sure. Some of that's kind of going on in this state, some could argue, with regard to the third-party candidacy running in our Senate race against Racy and Manchin.
Yeah, it sounds very similar. I did see a story that I guess you guys are kind of having the same situation. Your guy, was it Jesse Johnson?
Yeah.
So he's gonna be on the stage, too, at their debate. So that's
right, that's taking place in Morgantown. And I think it'll be interesting to be there as long as, you know, if they give... But the thing is, he's on the stage with the Constitution Party, and that guy is a real, you know, whoops, go get him, you know, bring the net, you know, all that pro-life nonsense and wants to execute people by stoning them to death, that guy.
Right.
And yet he's accorded the same legitimacy as Jesse Johnson? You know, I can't fathom it.
Yeah, exactly. And, well, that's the exact same situation with our Green Party candidate. I mean, the Green Party in New York is a fairly sizable voting bloc. I mean,
I would think so. Yeah,
they don't. Yeah, I mean, I don't know that they swing elections or ever have been sort of said to do that, because I think that the Democratic base historically has been so high in the state. So, I mean, I think, you know, Hawkins is, he's got a great platform. It's great. I mean, you know, I've actually already voted for him with my mail-in ballot that will be counted, ideally. I think it seems to me, I guess the point is I'm sort of prognosticating here that if Palladino pulls off an upset on November 2nd, you heard it here first. I just got a bad feeling about it.
Oh, that's too creepy to contemplate. I mean, that'd be like having Joe Arpaio be governor in New York. You know, they're out of the same mold.
Nice. That's good. I like that. I mean, I hate that, but it's a good comparison.
Come on, John. I mean, the revelations about his son managing the properties that are bondage themed nightclubs that this guy actually owns, and yet he's out there is there really that much Alabama in New York too that the sort of let's hate on the gay people argument can carry that kind of weight?
Well, let me tell you, I spent a couple of years in Atlanta before moving up here, and I mean, yeah, it's Atlanta, you know, but I've seen more rebel flags down here or up here than I did down there.
Ooh.
About the same amount of time. I mean, it's, but you also got the occasional house you see flying the old Union Jack, which I don't quite get that. Maybe there's some pockets of Tories hanging around.
Yeah, they didn't make it to the border in 1781.
Right, it's like the guys on the islands in the jungle wondering if the war's over, you know, maybe centuries later. But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, really, this is, there's some intense redneck pockets up here. and that's kind of an easy way to describe it, maybe, but I don't know. Palladino is, he's a thug, yeah, but he's very interesting. He really went crazy a couple of years back. When his son died in a car wreck, and he says that really made him reevaluate kind of everything and become a fighter and really into what he calls morality and all that stuff. So he's a little more complicated than just a thug who sends nasty emails.
Oh, but that's the thing. They usually are. What's happened here, John, is that you've got people who are more complex desperately trying to hide their complexity. Yeah, this is everything that Palladino has done has been geared and marketed solely and exclusively for the it's all been dog whistling for teabagger ears. Is that fair?
No, I think it definitely is. I mean, let me tell you, his signs are Syracuse, you know, orange and blue, and it's got his name, and on top it says, "I'm mad too, Carl." So, yeah, I mean, it's dog whistling, exactly.
I'm mad, too. Wow, what a political philosophy. Torchlight parades in the streets, maybe? Pitchforks? What?
Exactly, although I guess you could read it literally like, yeah, I'm mad, as in barking at the moon mad, and that's why I'm voting for him. But I guess it depends on how you want to read it.
And now we find ourselves back with the Mad Dog 2020.
Oh, see, I've closed the circle. So, orange days. What was that?
Orange driver. Orange driver will make a jackrabbit slap a bear.
Well, that's a pretty good endorsement. Although I've never seen orange driver anywhere. So.
Oh, I was standing at the little grocery store not far from where I live the other day. It was about I'd say it was 10 o'clock on Thursday morning, and there was a guy right behind me buying a bottle of it.
Oof. That's.
And, you know, I'm not going to stand in judgment of anybody in his cocktail, but yeah. At 10 o'clock in the morning, I'm like, holy Moses, you're going to have a great day, brother.
Well, Bob, you know, it's just that yesterday hadn't ended yet for that guy, so.
Well, right, you know.
Nightcap.
Sliding scale daylight.
There you go. Oh, man. Well, I guess before this devolves any further, I should probably let you go.
Yeah, because this has real potential to go straight through the floor.
Exactly. But yeah, I'll try to keep you guys posted on this. I just, again, bad feelings. A little worried about how this is going to play out.
You've got a reason to be, because if New York elects a nut job like that, what hope does Kansas have? What hope is there for Indiana or because those are traditional Republican strongholds. They will elect a guy with floppy shoes if you guys get Carl Paladino.
I tell you, could we be thinking of Mississippi as the new New York? I don't know, that's a scary thought.
Now there's a political slogan. Paladino for governor.
Or something.
New York is the new Mississippi.
There you go, that's
Jesus. Awesome. All right, John, you take care. Good hearing from you, brother.
All right, cheers, Bob.
Bye now. John calling from upstate New York. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Carl Paladino, the Danny DeVito penguin. Thank you. Good night.
Yes, there it is.
it's a dead ringer.
Oh, I've seen the photo comparison, and frankly, yeah, it's separated at birth material.
Yeah. So I have a question for you. And here it is. Who said this? It may be that regardless of what happens after this election, they feel more responsible, either because they didn't do as well as they anticipated, and so the strategy of just saying no to everything and sitting on the sidelines and throwing bombs didn't work for them, or they did reasonably well, in which case the American people are going to be looking to them to offer serious proposals and work with me in a serious way. Who said that, Bob?
Oh, that's President. No, we had a conniption about that Thursday night on the air. That was President Not Sure.
Yes. Unbelievable.
Well, you know, we always want to look forward and never look back.
So, one thing I can say about the Joe Miller thing,
yeah,
is there is a strong resemblance to a diabolical younger brother of Tom Wopat on Dukes of Hazzard.
You mean one of the thugs?
Yeah, no, Joe Miller himself.
Oh,
look at Joe Miller and Tom Wopat.
Oh wow, I never. Put those two right under your Danny DeVito penguin and Carl Paladino.
Yeah, exactly. No, but I did call to talk about the elections coming up. What were your thoughts on the? I know you're going to say something on it. What were your thoughts, or you're going to say something later on it? What were your thoughts on the Jack Conway remark to Rand Paul?
I'll be honest. I didn't. I saw the backside of that where Rand Paul says, "I won't shake the hand of a man who criticizes my religion." And the minute I saw that, David, I started thinking, I'm betting he didn't criticize his religion.
No, he didn't. Do you know what he criticized?
No, please help me with this, because I meant to go looking for it, and I got distracted, phone rang, you know.
Well, now see, I have music accompaniment to come with that, which I just sent to you. But, you see, he actually brought up the Aqua Buddha comment.
Oh!
That's what got him riled up.
Jack Conway rode his ass over Aqua Buddha, and that's when he said his religion had been criticized?
Yes, yes.
So he admits his religion is the religion of Aqua Buddha?
No, I think what happened is that I think he made a comment about his religion and background, but he followed the Aqua Buddha, and that's what made him storm off the page. But you see, what I just said, but what I sent you is the perfect music accompaniment. That's what they. If we can hear a little bit of that, because
yeah, okay, I got it here.
Okay.
I'm loving it.
Now, let me tell you why. I don't know if you recognize it or not.
Is that Parliament?
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Okay, there's three different layers on this one, Bob. You can't beat this song. For every time you think of Rand Paul, you should play this song, because number one, it's the Aqua Buddha, Aqua Boogie. Number two, it's Sir Nose, and Sir Nose was a character in George Clinton who he didn't want to dance, and eventually Star Child makes him dance. That's basically how all the concept records go. But see, Rand Paul's fraternity was named Nose.
Oh, no kidding. So
yeah,
it's sort of a multi-layered thing.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Let's check it out and see how this works. Hang on a minute, David.
Yeah, okay.
Something very personal to me, my wife, my kids, we take it very personally, and I will not be associated with someone who will attack my religion. This election will be about the future of America, who has the best vision. We will try to keep the debate on a higher tone. I hope you will leave my church, my family, and my religion out of it. But who has the best vision for America? Do you believe government is always the answer, or do you believe in the people? Do you believe in the individual entrepreneur, the individual businessman and woman to create jobs? I believe in the individual. I believe in capitalism. I believe we are the greatest nation ever known to man. We are the most humanitarian nation ever known to man. And I will defend those rights. I will keep government out of the way of business. Thank you very much for coming this evening. Thank you for your time.
Now that's exactly what they should have played underneath that tape.
I gotta tell you, David, I'm liking it.
But here's the third thing. Now here's the third tier. When I saw this, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe it fits the story perfectly. There's a part in the song where Sir Nose doesn't want to get wet. And remember the story about the girl that didn't want to get thrown in the lake? I was like, this is too bizarre.
Yeah, I'm. Now wait a minute. Conway found out that.
Yeah.
That
someone gave him the story.
That the Aqua Buddha crowd had been what, like outlawed by Baylor?
Something like that. I've actually been looking at their website, believe it or not, their fraternity, and I've been trying to find pictures of you know who. I'm still on the hunt for that.
You mean Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist?
Yes. They do have a lot of pictures on their gallery, and it's interesting to look at some of the things that they say about their university and the fact that it's, I guess, ultra religious or moderate religious, something somewhere along that. And I don't know. Here's the other interesting thing about this whole thing, and this is why a lot of Democrats, they need to learn to keep their mouth shut. As soon as he came out and he said this about Rand Paul, a lot of Democrats came to the defense of Rand Paul, saying, "Yeah, he shouldn't have said the Aqua Buddha thing."
Yeah, but God, how do you? No, I'm sorry, not to reach over, not to mix metaphors or anything, but when the curveball is hanging in space, right in the middle of the plate, right on the fat part of your bat, how do you not knock it out of the park?
You know, that's the thing about it. I mean, it's funny, because if you were to reverse this, Bob, and this is the other thing, what do you think right-wing radio would do if this was a Democrat?
You know, that's always a question you can ask, and the answer is never moderate or restrained or anything like that. I'll tell you what, just for the fun of it, let's go back. Now, what this is the closing statement of the Rand Paul-Jack Conway debate.
Right.
And as explained early on, Jack Conway had made a remark about Aqua Buddha and the fact that Baylor University, which is run by the Baptists, which that probably tells you something, I remember some Texas Republican congressman, or maybe it was Tom DeLay, or one of those freaks, getting all upset. Maybe it was Dick Armey, about the fact that the Baylor Baptists had gotten so heathen that they were now allowing dancing on campus. You know, it sounds to me like they had something worse than a dancing problem, you know, if you've got an Aqua Buddha problem. So that goes down at the front end, and then at the back end, this is Rand Paul's closing statement. Right. And let's give a listen to this without the aid of, of Parliament, which was awfully damn good, I gotta tell you, David. Here we go.
Dr. Paul, 1 minute. Closing statement.
When this debate ends, you'll notice that I will not be shaking his hand tonight. I will not shake hands with someone who attacks my religion and attacks my Christian beliefs. These are something very personal to me. My wife, my kids, we take it very personally.
And that's why there was Aqua Buddha in his past, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons why. I guess there's a clip of him talking about...
I mean, was he going to cry?
You know what? That sounded a bit petulant right there. Like, if you can't take that, why are you in politics?
Because this... Ron Paul is not known for running a Christian household. Because, right, among other things, he was a little toe nibbler to Ayn Rand, and she, of course, the only good thing you can say about Ayn Rand was that she was an atheist.
Yeah, when Rand Paul went to go see Red Dawn at the movies, he thought it was a historical film. Holy crap! The communists are just parachuting.
Wolverines!
Yeah, I mean, that's really where we're at right now.
So let's go back to Rand just for a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I will not be associated with someone who will attack my religion. This election will be about the future of America. Who has the best vision?
Now, let's wait a minute. Now, hold on just a minute there, because if I was just thinking, David, if I recall correctly, he was swanning around Kentucky talking to, like, the statewide convention of the First Holiness Apostolic the Snake Handling Society and Baptist Herpetological Sanctuary State Convention Group. That's when he refused to answer questions about evolution.
Oh, and in case anyone hasn't seen the clip, you also see at the end where his circle ring that he brought in, his hucksters that he brought in, half of the audience were for Rand Paul, and it's like they planned just right to clap on cue.
Well, and that's where I was going. I was going to let this thing get to the end because, you're like me, David. The applause factor is actually kind of telling as well. Here we go.
The debate on a higher tone. I hope you will leave my church, my family.
Wait, did he say higher tone? Did the Aqua Buddha guy just talk about a higher tone? It's hard to... It's hard to miss with this kind of stuff.
And my religion out of it. But who has the best vision for America? Do you believe government is always the answer, or do you believe in the people? Do you believe in the individual entrepreneur?
Now, see, that's a straw man argument, David. At what point did Jack Conway say government is always the answer?
I don't think he did.
He didn't. You know, that's the thing with these guys. They cannot, a Republican cannot win a battle of ideas. They have to make crap up. They have to do what they're best at. They have to lie. And that's what he's doing here. Because no one's asserted, you know, I'm a liberal, I'm a progressive. I'm a liberal. Okay?
Right.
But, no, government's not always the answer, but sometimes government serves a valid and legitimate purpose in reining in the excessive impulses of the business community. Right?
Yeah, it's a buffer zone. It's needed. And I think the biggest problem is that we can never have that discussion. Well, what do you think would happen if we took away your benefits, Mr. Rand Paul? What do you think would happen if we took away your benefits, Mr. Joe Miller?
They tried to have that discussion with him, and they asked him about Medicare, and it turns out that Rand Paul, I mean, that's the whole reason I did that Rand Paul libertarian ophthalmologist bit. Because that's when Rand Paul said, well, we don't need government involved in medicine, except for Medicare, because physicians deserve to live a comfortable life. And it was when I saw that line, comfortable life, that I immediately flashed on Daffy Duck screaming, I'm rich, I'm rich, I'm comfortably well off. That's him. Yeah, so, you know, nah, he's going to get government off of the backs of anybody that he... as long as government's got that big old golden teat hanging out there for him to live off of, sure. But let's cruise along just a little bit more for the fun of it.
Yeah.
Individual businessman and woman to create jobs. I believe in the individual. I believe in capitalism. I believe we are the greatest nation ever known to man. We're the most humanitarian nation ever known to man. And I will defend those rights. I will keep government out of the way of business. Thank you very much for coming this evening.
Now, what does that mean when he says, I'll keep government out of the way of business? As you know, he went on the Rachel Maddow show and said that, you know, government was getting in the way of business with the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act.
Oh, you know, I have something to say about that whole Rachel Maddow and appearing on CNN. I think the whole team deliberately said, all right, Rand, you're going to go on one of these shows, and then you're going to immediately denounce them, whatever they say. And you're never going to come back on again. Kind of like pulling an old Christine O'Donnell or a Sarah Palin or something like that. I'm never going on this show. And that's exactly what happened with Rand Paul. I mean, he hit the Maverick card again. Like what what Sarah Palin did. He's like a female Sarah. I mean, he's like a male Sarah Palin in a way, from Kentucky, with, you know, some dynasty cred, I guess, because of his father, Ron Paul. But other than that, I mean, this is what we're dealing with. We can't have a fair debate. When you have somebody, you know what, they need to make a rule. When you have somebody says, I don't want to shake your hand, well, you're not going to be in office. See you later. I mean, to me, that's how it should be. I mean, if you can't shake someone's hand or acknowledge the questioning that's happening right now, and at least be the person like, I'm going to decline to answer that. But to take that kind of tactic, it shows me that we got bigger problems than we ever realized.
Well, you know, does getting government off the back of business, getting out of business's way, does that include government getting out of, you know, because, you know, Eric Holder was out there saying, oh, by God, we're going to enforce them marijuana laws in California, and the California voters will be damned. Does that include the government getting out of the pharmaceutical company's way, as things like OxyContin absolutely ravage the mountaintop removal communities of eastern Kentucky? Because, you know, he said, I really don't think that's the kind of problem that you want government messing around with. Rand Paul said that, not me, Rand Paul. And, you know, bless her heart, never, ever, ever, David, never sell Juanita short. Because here we go talk, and what does she find me? She sends me the link to the Church of Aqua Buddha.
Yeah.
And it's a great thing. It's aquabuddha.com. And it's got the most precious photograph of Rand Paul standing at a podium with a big blue bong in one hand and a fired-up Zippo lighter in the other.
I didn't know there were pictures out of Rand Paul and his...
No, it's a photo. It's a Photoshop, but God, it's precious. But it's, you know, it's another one of those moments where I wish I was a billionaire. Because I'd just, you know, I'd take a few $100,000, devil may care, and go down to Kentucky and put up that Photoshop all over the state.
Well, before I go, you know, speaking of billionaires, and you know the billionaires for Bush, and I know you know about the corporation running for Congress. Did you hear about the finale to that?
No.
The Murray Hill. Well, allegedly Murray Hill, they were running for the people who don't know the backstory. They were running as a corporation, kind of like an a nonprofit agency to make a point that corporations running for office is something extremely a place where we shouldn't go there, basically. And they got their application rejected, and this is hilarious because they weren't 25 years of age. Can we have a rim shot on that, please? A corporation, because they treat it like a person.
Not because they're a corporation, but because they're not 25 years old.
But here's
so in other words, if ExxonMobil,
right,
or IBM,
right,
or the GE or DuPont,
right,
one of those venerable old American corporations, well, they'd, by God, they'd accept the filing because they're more than 25 years old.
You know what? I'm the cynical type of person that is I'm at that point right now, and I believe that more than half of the citizens' population in this country would vote for a corporation for president.
Oh, you won't get me to take that bet.
WWE? You don't think they vote for that? Oh, yeah. Monday Night Raw for president. They'd do it.
Well, you know, and how much of a step is it from there to President Alonzo Mountain Dew Camacho?
I know. It goes back to that idiocracy thing. So, you know, I don't... So when you look at the landscape, the political landscape that we're in, and the fact that someone can actually get a letter back that says, "Well, I'm sorry, but you're not 25 years of age," like talking to him like a real person, and it's like you're in the Twilight Zone, basically.
That is what 2010 in the United States of America is, David. It is the American political Twilight Zone.
And we don't know how this is going to turn out. It might be a fairly moderate Twilight Zone, or it might be a episode, or it might be a fairly grim Twilight Zone.
No, I think this particular episode involves gremlins peeling the skin off the wings.
Oh man. Well, Bob.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean, and it is something definitely to ponder.
All right, David, you take care, and gee. Thanks for the on-the-fly mashup.
All right, Bob, later.
Later, David. Bye now. Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine. That, well, you got to admit, the background music for Rand Paul was that was pretty damn precious. I mean, let's check this out again. This is just too good. So, and here.
That I will not be shaking his hand tonight. I will not shake hands with someone who attacks my religion and attacks my Christian beliefs. These are something very personal to me. My wife, my kids can take it very personally, and I will not be associated with someone who will attack my religion. This election will be about the future of America. Who has the best vision? We will try to keep the debate on a higher tone. I hope you will leave my church, my family, and my religion out of it.
Man, that still kills me. We're going to keep this on a higher tone. Hoo-wee! I couldn't script that in a million flipping years. Onward to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. I don't know who this is, but by God, I'll match the sentiment exactly.
What's up?
Hey, Jim, what's happening?
I don't know what to say. I'm fixing to retire with my Barbara Cartland novel and my cambric handkerchief and crawl back into my chambered Nautilus.
It's about, well, yeah, and it might not hurt to take Aqua Buddha with you.
Well, what is that? Is that an astringent, or is it a mouthwash, or is it some type of new cordial?
No, that was the name of Rand Paul's bong down at Baylor University.
His bong?
Yeah, his bong.
Does it have stirrups on it?
By God, if it didn't, it should have. No, this is... remember they kidnapped the cute little co-ed from the swim team, and they went to her apartment, and they were going to make her, like, get copiously high, and she wouldn't do it. So they kidnapped her and took her to a creek and made her kneel in the creek in somewhere near Waco, Texas, and bow down and praise the bong Aqua Buddha. You know how it is with those crazy college kids. They name their bongs.
Yeah. I can't remember the name of mine. I don't remember why.
You just remember the fact that it had stirrups. And an aquarium pump.
Oh, my Lord, you've just gone all over the board tonight with all kinds of stuff.
You would almost swear that I had been into the Mad Dog 2020 Orange Driver before I got behind the mic, wouldn't you?
I guess so. My Lord in heaven, God Almighty. You know, the next thing they're going to come out with is a lycanthropy party.
Ooh.
Why not?
Yeah, absolutely. Something. They already sell the contact lenses and the ears. I don't want to think about the tail, but, you know, why not?
You know, it is coming up on Halloween. Why not? You know, good Lord. I mean, no offense to Lobo and Blanca, but no, Jesus God Almighty.
Yeah, I think even they would object, Jim.
Oh, Lord. Lord God Almighty. You know, this thing about, going back to this marijuana thing. I mean, don't these people realize that this country's basic agricultural product was hemp?
Yeah, you'd be surprised the number of people that that's lost on.
Well, don't they realize that the very paper that the Declaration of Independence was written on was hemp paper?
Was it really?
Yes. And
was it gummed on one edge?
I don't know about that. You'll have to, you know, whichever, the 1.5s or whatever types of papers you roll on, but nonetheless. Or homespun. What was that? Benjamin Franklin wore it in the court of Marie Antoinette. And that was made out of hemp.
Well, that's mainly because it's a magnificent plant with a million uses.
I mean, when George Bush parachuted into the Pacific, the ropes that held him up on his parachute were made of hemp.
Well, thank God his son hadn't been born, or the parachute wouldn't have opened because they would have been smoked.
I just don't know. I don't know. And I mean, this is just absolutely getting to the point of just insanity. I mean, all they need to do is have a background thing for him done by Weird Al.
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is, though, Jim, you mentioned the Bush family. And we know what kind of crazy party gals Barbara and the other Bush twin were.
Yeah, Jenna.
Jenna, there we go. Barbara was the dark haired one with the little mouse ears, right? But they were quite the pair. And then down in Florida, you had Jebby's kids, Noelle, who ordered in cocaine to her rehab suite. And the son, who was caught doing donuts on a friend's parents' lawn, you know, we only thought we saw out of control kids. You just wait and see. If Rand Paul gets elected, watch out for his kids. I mean, we just thought that the Bush kids were a little crazy. The Rand Paul kids will be out there.
Oh, I'm sure they will be. I mean, on which publication will their pictures be? High Times?
Well, that or the local police blotter. I mean, I'll never forget that photograph of Barb and Jenna rolling on the floor, long neck bottle of beer in one hand and a cigarette in the other, laughing and falling all over. You know, that's the whole point. Kids do that. And they put on funny noses at Baptist schools.
Of course they do. I mean, you know, everybody gets to that stage in their life when they're going to party and have a good time, and they're going to do a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I mean, it's part of the human development process.
Hear, hear. Because you know what? If you don't go through that, odds are you'll wind up being, I don't know, Bernie Madoff.
You're right, Bob. I guess so. I remember this quotation from High Times. I think it went, "Dope will get you to times of morality a lot easier than morality will get you to times of no dope."
Amen, and I suggest we shake out the carpet.
Well, I guess so, but I have never in my life seen such bizarre political pronunciamientos as I have in the past couple weeks.
You know, it's not the phase of the moon, Jim. The closer we get to Election Day, the weirder it's going to get. I mean, I haven't even scratched the surface of Moran Monday. You know, Joe Miller and his false arrest squad from Drop Zone Security. And then there's a guy named John Yates.
Are these guys with their handcuffs? Do they have leather outfits too?
They got high and tight skinhead haircuts, and they're very humorless, and they have no necks, and curly things are coming up and going into their ears out of their very dark suit jackets. They look like imitation Secret Service.
Oh my God. Oh, did you hear about the two women who were sequestered by a mall policeman?
Yeah, that's another one of those false imprisonment stories.
For holding hands. And now the mall is being picketed by people who are very upset about this.
No, Jim, be fair. They weren't just holding hands. They was a kissing, too. They kissed each other.
So what? I mean, I...
And the mall cop came up and said, "We don't want that kind of conduct here at Crippled Fawn Commons Shopping Amazement Center." And now the apology letter has come out. It doesn't say so, but if you pour the lemon juice on it and make the hidden ink come out, it's, "Please, Jesus, don't sue us. Please don't take ownership of my mall." Because they're going to have the right to when they're done.
I just don't know. I mean, it's just...
Well, that's what I was telling you, that we got Representative John Yates down in Georgia. He's a member of the Georgia State House. And they asked him what to do about illegal immigration in Florida.
Well, what's his solution?
Troops on the border should be given shoot-to-kill orders, and that flyers should be dropped in Mexico warning of the new immigration policy, quote, "They ought to be armed, and if warned, leaflets dropped all over Mexico says that we will shoot to kill if anybody crosses, and be serious about this, and if they do that, then there won't be anybody killed." That's a quote.
Bob, I don't think that'll work.
And when he was pressed on it, he said, "Stopping Hitler was worth the price. It's our border. They're invading us."
Well, you know, I'm afraid we didn't stop Hitler. I mean, Hitler somehow got in under the, you know, under the edge of the tent somewhere.
Yeah. But like I said, it's going to be this all the way to November 2nd. Here in West Virginia. You know, John Racey, Rocket Man Racey is just...
Now, what is this thing with Racey and laser beams?
Well, you know, he's for small government, and he says that the minimum wage and Social Security and Medicare and all that, those are all unconstitutional. And he wants to cut government spending because spending is out of control with, you know, that one in the White House. And then he turns around and he wants a $20 billion laser system to protect us against North Korean missiles. Because he's also asserted that North Korean missiles can reach the Pacific Northwest and Alaska.
What, those Taipei missiles?
I don't know which ones.
Yeah, Taipei. I thought he'd been watching Goldfinger too many times. He was trying to knock over Fort Knox or something.
Well, see, I had him pegged as an Austin Powers International Man of Mystery viewer, but you could be right.
You know, I'm just being totally ridiculous and flippant tonight because...
But no, the thing is, Jim, you only think you are. These are the guys who are... Because how else do you respond to insanity but with a giggle here and a giggle there and, I don't know, maybe a visit to the Shrine of Aqua Buddha?
May I ask you something, please?
You certainly may.
Where did the term Aqua Buddha come from? What is its generic origin or its etymological origin?
Well, to the best of my understanding, and somewhere along the trail of your life, you may have seen one of these. You know, little ceramic bongs come in all sorts of shapes.
Oh, how well I know.
You know, mushrooms and wizards, and apparently Rand Paul had a bong that was shaped like the Buddha. You can just imagine, you know, the little bowl with the little stem coming out of his little navel, and the the carburetor hole there in the back of his neck. You get the picture?
Yeah, but it's not real efficient.
What? God love you, Jim. At least you've got your priorities.
I mean, Lord heaven.
And so they set the swimmer in the creek because there was this big to-do at Baylor with the administration being concerned with groups that were not Christian. And so by way of tweaking the administration, they made her get in on her knees in this creek. And, you know, it's a creek in Texas, so, you know, it probably didn't cover her knees.
Yeah.
And they set the Buddha bong down before her and told her they wouldn't let her go until she prayed to Aqua Buddha.
By taking a hit or what?
No, I think she just had to, like, bow down before it because there'd been a big to-do at Baylor over the worship of false images and false gods and graven images. Hallelujah, praise Jesus.
You know, Bob, I'll tell you something. Right now, I'm looking at 9 statues of Egyptian deities, almost the entire pantheon. It's just a habit of mine because, you know,
Bast was always my favorite.
I admire and respect their civilization. I mean, I've got Anubis, Horus, Isis, Nephthys, Thoth, Set, and I'm sure if Rand Paul were to come in here, he'd probably have me shot.
Very likely. And by the way, Sparky in the chat room is reminding me, Jim, not reminding me, I didn't know this. Anyway, he says that the term praying to Buddha was a slang term for smoking dope that came out of Southeast Asia during the Vietnam War. Among some of the folks there.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
So you know, you figure, this is up in the '80s or whatever, and
you know, ironically, one of the best bombs was just was an M1 rifle.
A Garand?
One of the best bombs they used was an M1 rifle.
Well, I guess that's probably the origin of the term shotgunning.
Well, yeah, exactly. But, you know, I don't understand these people's desire to try to legislate morality and to get into the business of these, for example, the enforcement of this marijuana law when California wishes to legalize stuff. I mean, someone in the program earlier mentioned, don't they have better things to do and higher priorities than this? I mean, look at the Netherlands. I mean, in Amsterdam, walk down the street, you can go in there and buy a pack of Astro joints. But yet, which country in Western Europe holds the most of our treasury bills?
That would be Holland, would it not?
It's the Netherlands, yeah. I mean, you know, when you get your emphasis on the wrong syllable, you really get yourself wrapped around the axle, and you really get your titty in a ringer.
I don't think it could be said any better, Jim.
Well, I don't think I made a whole lot of sense tonight, and I really...
No, more than you know. More than you know.
Well, I mean, you know, it's just my own bizarre way of looking at things, but, I mean, when they are going to, for example, pair the Green candidate here... With whom?
The Constitution Party. I mean, the Constitution Party candidate, Jesse Johnson, Manchin, and Racy will be at the debate.
Okay, and now who are they going to pair Johnson with? They're going to pair him with somebody else, aren't they?
Yeah, I don't know that it's necessarily a pairing. I mean, they're all four up there on the dais together.
Well, I mean, I thought I heard they were going to pair him with some type of libertarian or...
No, that's just, you know... John, you know, the Mountain Party and Jesse, they're serious candidates. Whereas this Mountain Party person, holds, you know, real lunatic positions. You know, Christian Reconstructionist, Dominionist. Go look, well, just in your idle spare time, go and look up the Constitution Party. Your hair will stand on end, Jim.
Were these the ones who were like pro-prostitution and stuff like that? Or
No. The Constitution Party wants to stone people to death.
Okay.
They want total control over women's bodies. You know, real weirdos.
Well, aren't we like fighting people like that in Afghanistan?
Shh! Don't tell them. Or what's more, do tell the rest of the world, because yeah, we kind of are.
Well, I guess they want to put women in burqas too, don't they?
Well, not really. They just who needs a burqa if you don't let them out of the house?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they can walk around the house naked or whatever they want to do. I mean, but the point of fact is, a lot of this stuff simply just not pass the common sense test, and it's getting more and more bizarre to the point of disintegration. I mean, you've got factualization, which in certain cases to me equals complete and total political disintegration and suicide.
And sooner or later, someone will march a horse into the Senate.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Who did that, Caligula?
Yep. Incitatus.
Well, I'm sure he was a very nice horse, and he deserved a very nice stable, and would have been a great proconsul. But nonetheless, on that note, I'll let somebody else take the floor.
All right, Jim, you take care, and with you having mentioned lycanthropy, that reminded me of something. I got something fun to play right here, right now. Talk to you later, Jim. Bye now. And that's our buddy Jim. I think he's our resident esotericist. You know, anybody who's got nine Egyptian deities, they got their hand on the esoteric throttle. Yeah, I got to thinking about this. I just love zombies. Now, see, that's what happens when you work on the fly. I wanted the Vincent Price part. Although you got to admit, that is just one funky groove. And don't I just sound pathetic at the age of 47 saying something is one funky groove? God. Now, these kids with their rock and roll music. Oh, and then, no, seriously. And then there's this. And then there's this. Back to the phones in a minute. A couple of lines open if you want to jump in. Advice coming in from the advice section. Kate noting, I didn't mix the plum purple with anything. The only thing that tasted good before noon was Thunderbird. You guys! It's getting hopeless here. Oh, but, yeah, well, you know how that goes. It's Moran Monday. The door is open. And you guys just keep walking through it. I mean, that's really all there is to it. No, from the silliness department, probably should save this for Wednesday, but how can you? It's Moran Monday. Because this is, you know, anything like this is a toss-up between Moran Monday and prayer meeting Wednesday. Mora sent this along to me via Gawker. Speaking of me saying at the age of 47 what I said, isn't that a funky groove? Yazza, yazza. Man, the Lawrence Welk impression's sucking. In a lame attempt at being cool, the Vatican's official newspaper, L'Osservatore Romano, wrote, "Few people know it, but, and he does everything he can to hide it, but it is true. Homer J. Simpson is a Catholic," writes Gawker. Okay. You know, newsflash to the guy who wears the lace dresses and the red and the red Judy Garland pumps. Homer J. Simpson is a cartoon character. Do we have to go through all this all over again? Because God knows we went through it with Jerry Falwell trying to explain to him about Tinky Winky being a goddamn puppet. Yeah. And then on, you know, the mean, hateful, and rotten side of the equation, there's something completely different, as the saying goes. Yeah, you know, you see this kind of stuff, and it, you just don't, it don't work. It's, again, I hate to keep working this theme as if, you know, I'm somehow shocked, but for the love of God, it's 2010. And so why not? Yesterday, Sunday, there was a Colorado Senate debate hosted by Meet the Press where Republican candidate Ken Buck, well, never mind what, here, you listen for yourself, okay? Because I just don't want to read it.
Mr. Buck, I want to start with you. The issue of gays in our country. In a debate last month, you expressed your support for Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which we talked about with Mr. Gitt.
Now, hold on just a damn minute. Just a quick note to David Gregory. Did you hear that line? This issue of gays in our country. When you say gays in our country, doesn't that sort of logically or linguistically exclude gays from our, this issue of gays in our country? Nice setup. David Gregory. Professional journalist.
And you alluded to lifestyle choices. Do you believe that being gay is a choice?
I do.
And based on what?
Based on what?
Yeah.
Well,
you believe that.
I guess you can choose who your partner is.
You don't think it's something that determined at birth?
I think that birth.
So wait a minute. When I, as a young man, started dating any of the various and sundry young women that I dated, that meant that was indicia of my lifestyle choice? I guess you can choose who your partner is. Let's go back and hear this idiocy one more time.
For Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which we talked about with Mr. Gibbs, and you alluded to lifestyle choices. Do you believe that being gay is a choice?
I do.
And based on what?
Based on what?
Yeah.
Well,
you believe that.
Certainly not facts. But say David Gregory gives him an out. Do you believe? There it is again. At 24 minutes past the hour on Monday night, the 18th of October, there it is again. The most dangerous word in the English language. Believe. Do you believe that being gay is a lifestyle choice? Because see, you can't know that. You can't know that because every bit of science, every bit of empirical, empirically gathered data, every bit of reason, every bit of common sense indicates factually to the contrary. But that's okay. David Gregory is going to give Ken Buck an out and let him believe. I believe that every drop of rain that falls, a flower grows. You know.
I guess you can choose who your partner is.
You don't think it's something that determined at birth?
I think that birth has an influence over, like, alcoholism and some other things, but I think that basically you have a choice.
Oh! Being gay is like being an alcoholic. Let's work this one a little bit, shall we? Being gay is like being an alcoholic because it can be influenced at birth. In other words, if your mama and daddy were alcoholics, there might be a genetic predisposition for you to be an alcoholic. If your grandmother and grandfather, or if both of your granddads were alcoholics, there's a chance that you, two generations later, might also be an alcoholic because you might be genetically predisposed to be an alcoholic. Doesn't really work with the gay, though, does it? Because... No. It doesn't, because Ken Buck is a goddamn moron. It is, after all, Moran Monday. But Maura sent this song along to me. It's really sweet. It's a sort of a new theme song that has come out for the Trevor Project. You know, that's Dan Savage's It Gets Better project. This is Broadway Sings for the Trevor Project. And you know what? It's kind of an emetic. Sort of a palate cleanser, if you will, for having to tolerate filth, walking human filth like Ken Buck. This song is dedicated to anyone who has ever been bullied.
When you feel like you're alone and the world throws out a lot of hate,
it's not the end. You're not out there on your own. There's still so much in life to celebrate.
Just look up.
You know, I love the sentiment behind that. My God, it's a who's that thing is a who's who of Broadway. I like the sentiment of the song. But you know how else it gets better? You know what really makes it get better? When we learn to stand up to these hate-filled thugs and let them know that their brand of behavior will not be tolerated, and that they can no longer hide behind the sick and infected shroud of religion as their preferred vehicle of hatred. That's when it gets better. It gets better when you and I, regardless of sexuality or the whatever word you want to describe it. It gets better when you and I decide that we can't stand having our culture, our society, poisoned by these fundamentalist, dead-from-the-neck-up bigots anymore. That's a beautiful piece of outreach within the gay community and those allied with it, regards gay, straight, asexual, whatever. It gets better. But I can't overemphasize the fact that it really gets better when we determine to make it better. You can't just ignore bigots any more than the Klan could be ignored, because they operate on the same intellectual and emotional level as the Klan. There's not a damn dime's bit of difference. You couldn't slide a matchbook cover between the bigotry of the bigotry of Southern racism and the bigotry of Christian hate, so-called Christian hate, against people for simply being who they are. And yeah, there was a lot of love that went out to the aggrieved during the civil rights movement, and it's good that this outreach is there. But there also has to be some in-your-face resistance. No violence, but just making it clear that they're dinosaurs and we're humans, and we win. And cultures like that don't just happen. They are created by the hard work and goodwill of people determined to create such an atmosphere of tolerance for people regardless. What the hell business is it of ours? And that our only goal be that everyone be as happy as they can be, because like Kurt Vonnegut said, and he's one of my heroes, basically think we were put here to dance. Here. Ron and Raleigh writing in about Ken Buck. Can you be genetically predisposed to being an asshat like Ken Buck if your progenitors were asshats? Well, see, that's the thing. This proves that being an asshat is not, it may be genetic, but it is also highly environmental. Because Ken Buck gets to be the kind of horse's rear end that he is, because Ken Buck is praised, and Ken Buck is given accolades, and he is bruited about from the pulpit. He's a man speaking up for our Christian values. Hallelujah, praise Jesus. I would hazard a guess that at least 90% of the active hatred of homosexuality in this country comes directly from the pulpit. Because otherwise you have no good reason for engaging in that hate. Religion provides that reason. Oh, look there, right there in the book of Second Joash. It says, "Yea, and did Joash go down and set fire to the homes of the flaming homosexuals, and God was pleased by the smell of their burning hides." Hallelujah. Let us pray, dear Jeebus, help us to hate the homosexuals like you want us to, even though you, Jeebus, never said nothing in none of your books about how you hated them too. We'll just do all the hating for you, because we love you that much, Jeebus. Hallelujah, amen, glory. It's how it works. It really is how it works. Hey, welcome to the program.
God's a greetings. What's going on,
Bob? Hey, what's happening, Spike?
Not much. have a little breathing time tonight, so able to listen to the show for a little while, and I certainly love the outrage from Rand Paul of someone making fun of his Buddha.
yeah, I know.
I would hope in that race he loses, but in a state like that, it's possible.
Yeah, it's Kentucky. It's Kentucky. I'd be ready with my Chinatown clip if I were you, Spike. You know, forget about it, Jake. It's Chinatown.
Yeah. Well, it's where Jim Bunning is from too, I do believe, and we all see how bat CC's crazy Jim Bunning is as an elected official. Going to prove that maybe people who from the world of sports should stick to sports and people from the world of politics should stay out of sports. Kind of like the Texas Rangers, good example of that.
Oh, well, yeah, there is that.
They were terrible. Now Nolan Ryan's running them. A little better with a guy at baseball doing that. He needs to stop making endorsements for president and running baseball and just keep running a baseball team.
Right.
Good God. The right wing in this country is so out of their minds. But, you know what really is getting to me is these 501c4s. And the barrage of just negative ads they're running for candidates on both sides. Although the ones for Democrats are vanishing because they can't outspend the right wing and doing it. So that right now the Republicans are basically taking over the negative ads on TV. But I can tell you from doing phone banking, there's just a large contingent of people in this country who are idiots and all, you know, real. Reality.
No, you know, there's a Bible verse, I think, and Jesus said, "Yea, lo, verily, the idiots ye have always with ye."
But, because there's a lot of people, and a lot of them who are registered Democrats who are saying they're just not going to vote. And, you know, it's funny how quickly everyone in this country with instant gratification, since their television viewing is being interrupted by loud, which granted they are very loud and obnoxious ads, But because of that, they're now not going to vote, which that'll show the people in charge by leaving them in charge, I might add. Important point that seems to go over a lot of their heads. But, you know, if we've learned anything is that when you leave it to an election where only fringe groups essentially are going to show up, only the very loyalists of the parties and things like that, they're going to outdrill you with those Tea Party freaks. And that's not going to be good, which boggles me why the Democratic Congressional Committee was running Republican light negative ads. The one thing that the guy who's still going to lose here, but at least he's gotten closer in poll numbers with Honorado for the governor's race here, the one thing that's worked to his advantage is because he's only run such a somewhat positive TV ad campaign. Corbett, by running such a negative one, has been kind of losing points over this. And this should be like a clear indication, because in the congressional district next to mine, not mine, is Chris Carney versus, I forget what his first name is, his last name is Marino, and he was involved with a lot of corruption around here. So that is like 15 minutes from my house that was built, where the guy actually had the connections to organized crime at one time. He was under investigation. And this guy, while, you know, was working out of the office and gave him a recommendation, even though he was being investigated. So the Democrat Congressional Committee has been running an ad campaign and a website, Casino Marino, which, you know, yeah, it's clever that it rhymes, but that's also a real good way to give way too much ammunition to the opponent so that they can turn around and say, oh, look, they're making fun of Italians. And not to mention, it's just so, their ads are so loud about it, like the Republican ones, that they're going to cost themselves the election by acting like Republicans. But it, I guess, serves a blue dog right.
Well, yeah, I guess. I'm getting... This crap gets to me after a while, you know. But by the same token, I guess it's what we feast on. I saw some number that congressional campaigns, just the House of Representatives, Spike, the dollar figure is up to $147.5 million have been spent on it. And for what?
Yeah.
For what? Where did the money go? What did the money do?
Yeah, there's an ungodly amount of money being spent right now. I think the Republicans, or their groups, are paying upwards of like 10 grand per spot on local TV around here for races like Kanjurski, Barletta, the Marino, Carney one. We're not talking Philadelphia or Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, or even Harrisburg or Lehigh Valley. We're talking about basically the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre media market. 10 grand an ad spot in the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre media market. That's almost like spending 10 grand in your media market. The Scranton-Wilkes-Barre media market is a minor league media market. It is not the big time. It's where Bill O'Reilly got his start in television. 10 grand a spot in Bumblehump, Pennsylvania's media market.
You said Bumblehump. I didn't.
Right.
But, no, it's... Look, I think the race for Senate in this state has topped $2.5 million. And as I sat there doing my thing Saturday, waiting to serve out portions of chili and so forth, I couldn't help seeing out of the corner of my eye the television there. You know, it was tuned to a football game. The TV was, because it was in the bar. And what did I see at every break? A John Racy ad talking about Joe Manchin is the little boy toy of that one in Washington. He's a rubber stamp for Barack Obama.
Yeah. You would think Nancy Pelosi was a Pennsylvania politician the way her name is thrown out in the right wing ads out here. Pelosi, Pelosi, Pelosi. They have Pelosi Tourette's.
A noun and a verb in Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah, you know, and the funny thing is don't you know, they get all bent out of shape and cry like there's no tomorrow if you mention like Sarah Palin in an ad or George W. Bush, or I guess they can't really say much about.
Well, sure, because then Rand Paul has to put one foot in a bucket and cry about how somebody's criticizing his religion.
Right. You know, the only one I guess they can get away with without the right wing complaining in Pennsylvania is Santorum, since he still likes to insist he's allegedly a resident of this.
Yeah, when was the last time he was actually seen in the state of Pennsylvania, Spike?
Aside from when colleges pay him to speak, not too often. He's like Sarah Palin when he goes to the money, and he's spent more time in Virginia than he did in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
That's what I was saying. I mean, he's a Virginian, isn't it? Isn't he? I mean, he pays all his taxes in Virginia. That's where he's registered, you know.
That's where his kids go to school. When your kids go to school in a state, that's usually where you would consider your home to be.
It's a pretty good indication, yeah.
Yeah, and it's bad in politics. It's one thing if you were Michael Andretti and you claimed you were from Nazareth, Pennsylvania, and you got a Midwest accent from growing up in Indiana, when all you are is just, like, you know, a sports personality. But when you're an elected official, you should be keeping it a little more legit.
Well, among other things, there are actually domicile laws that are supposed to apply to elected officials.
Yeah.
But apparently those things are, shall we say, interpreted liberally these days.
Well, and also, by the way, I might point out, if you really look at a lot of races, a lot of Republicans are alien transplants to where they're running. Pat Toomey's not a Pennsylvanian.
Is Joe Sestak?
California race. What's that?
Is Joe Sestak?
Yeah, he was born in Pennsylvania. Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know. I rely on you being our Pennsylvania correspondent. So.
Yeah, no, that's why when he left the service, he came back to Pennsylvania. Plus, not to mention the Philadelphia area at one point was a huge stronghold for the United States Navy. Hence, why the Army Navy game is so heavily played in Philadelphia.
Franklin Field.
They used to be a bigger military presence there.
Right. And it was deemed a neutral site for, the Annapolis versus West Point.
Right. Yeah, it was kind of a meeting ground because both institutions have reasons to pass them through Philadelphia, especially in the older days where there was a lot more naval ships ported in Philadelphia. Now the only ones you really see docked in Philly are basically retired ones. Yeah, no, he's a Pennsylvanian. Obviously, he lived all over the place with the military for quite some time. You know, the funny thing is that the NRA ads against him, they cite zero votes in the House and zero quotes in the media. But they run on this thing that you're going to lose your Second Amendment right if he gets elected. And it's laughable. There's people who actually buy into this. And they're like, oh, well, he supports, and when they, what they mention he supports is he supports, a couple of rules being enforced? Ooh, that's not really a ban. That's just, you know, enforcing rules. Something the right claims we don't do enough of. You know, we don't need more rules. We need better enforcement. You know, heaven forbid.
Yeah, they do say that a little bit, don't they?
The rule. Yeah, you know, heaven forbid we should have a politician who believes that you have the right to bear arms, but you might want to prove that you're, you know, mentally stable so you don't go out and try to assassinate someone.
Well, you liberal, that just proves that you're biased against the mentally unstable.
Right. I mean, it's kind of funny that the Brady Bill is spoken about like it's an outright effort to ban weapons when all it was is an effort to regulate what goes on. Imagine if we did, if we carried the same belief in the Second Amendment in the world of the Department of Motor Vehicles. Imagine if there was no licensing. There's no way to prove that your vehicle was even fit. No way to prove you know how to drive. How would that work out after a while? You know, perhaps a lot of our problems with gun accidents is the simple fact that we don't record. I have, and trust me, I am not anti-gun. I have no problem with having to take a permit test, essentially, something like that. You know, obviously you don't. I honestly believe there's nothing wrong with that. And heck, in Pennsylvania, to get your hunting license, you have to sit through a day-long
hunter safety course. Seminar. The same thing obtains here.
Right. I mean, what's the big deal? Even though I had a background in long guns, when I finally went to shoot a handgun, I took a safety course, and it was kind of funny. The person at the range was actually surprised I did that, saying, "Oh, you used the gun. I'm surprised you did that." Well, I never used a handgun before. Let me make sure I don't do something stupid. I don't want to accidentally lose this, you know, the skin of my hand.
You don't want to be a Darwin Award nominee this year.
What's that?
You don't want to be a Darwin Award nominee this year. The Darwins, you know, the named for, you know, obviously the guys who take the. Hey, look here! I've strapped a rocket engine on the back of my Volkswagen Rabbit. You light it, I'll drive it. You know, Darwin Award. Exactly. Hey, Spike, I got to run along, brother. Good hearing from you.
All right, man.
Take care now.
Yep.
Later. And I am forbidden from saying go Phillies. I have to be neutral in this. I can't say go Giants or go Phillies. I can't say go Phillies to Spike, and I can't say go Giants to Marty, because otherwise there will be problems, you see. You know, 5 years ago, it's almost 5 years ago, I never dreamed the sort of things that would be imposed upon me just by way of being a good and neighborly talk host. I've got a moment of this is a late breaking Moran nominee, and we just cannot not feature this Moran. This Moran's name is Representative Calvin Hill. He's a Republican from Canton, Georgia. He's a member, once again, of the Georgia State House. Crazy. You know, cue up Gnarls Barkley. Representative Calvin Hill has waged a war against professors, not high school teachers, professors, being able to teach courses in the public universities of Georgia, the public ones. Full-on professors. A campaign against them teaching courses in public universities in Georgia dealing with sexual health and anything related to that. No, really. The people associated with him have tried to get professors fired for teaching about things like male prostitution or gay history. Ad infinitum. Our public colleges are not the place for our young adults and future leaders to experiment and experience these types of sexually explicit behavior. What the hell is Friday night on campus for then, Representative? It can't be class time all the time. But, you know, scratch a bigot, expose a hypocrite. Calvin Hill's a pig licking because he's a businessman. He's a businessman. And he runs a company called Gila Distributing Company, G-I-L-A Distributing Company, Promotional Advertising Products. You know, they sell printed hoodies and the pens and ball caps and picture frames and crap like that. The only problem is they also sell penises. So you can't learn, just to recap, for this Moran nominee, Representative Calvin Hill of Georgia, you can't be learning about no sexuality in no public college courses, because college ain't the places for young adults to be learning nothing. But you can learn about it on the pages of the Gila Distributing catalog. Under the heading Pinnacle Line, PM2032, and there's a photograph, and the base of it has little crosshatched drawings of pubic hair, and the top of it has eyes, and, well, there's a sort of a ridge that winds up looking sort of like a mouth. Pinnacle Line, PM2032, penis with eyes-shaped stress reliever. It's a stress reliever, shaped like a penis that has eyes. Penis with eyes, stress reliever... Now this... oh, this is the... I just want to meet the copywriter. Stress relievers are not suitable for children under 3 years of age. No, by God, nor are they suitable for adults over 18 years of age, according to the guy who owns the company. Oh, well, Bob let up. That's just one. Well, then there's EV-136, the squeeze breast ball stress reliever. Oddly enough, unlike the penis stress reliever, however, the breast ball stress reliever does not have a warning that it's not suitable for children under three. Then there's the Peter Pauper Press, Inc., 8303 Little Black Book of Sex Secrets by D. Flower. And the Peter Pauper Press, Inc., 9119, Petites Plus, Great Sex, A Kit for Lovers, Lovemaking Techniques to Blow Your Partner's Mind. Kit includes a lover's guide to the Kama Sutra, strawberry body dust, and a feather tickler. Where's the duck? Oh, Calvin Hill, we do love you. Because he got caught, this is all because he's in a re-election campaign, and his Democratic opponent found all this on his website. His opponent is a 50-year-old homemaker, and she set up an internet site displaying these products. She said, it wasn't to be mean, southern ladies, it wasn't to be mean, but to show the hypocrisy. I'm not angry with him so much as I am disappointed. Bless his heart. God love him. Okay, the last part's I added. But of course, Calvin Hill had to put out a press release about this, or at least somehow mention it or explain it away. And Calvin Hill said, with 600,000 products, there's always a possibility that something slips through. That's the problem when your penis stress relievers keep slipping through. I don't see no relationship whatsoever between how I feel about fully grown adults in the state of Georgia learning about filthy things like sex and the fact that I sell filthy things like sex toys. Damn, if there was more time left in the program, I really would. I would queue up Pastor from Montgomery, but I don't got it. Let's see. Let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Yes, Jim.
Listen, I've got three things to say, and I'll get off here. Number one, these people who are so hung up about sex probably aren't getting any. Number two, as far as love and peace towards some of these people, remember Stonewall in 1969? What happened there?
Yeah, that got a little, it wasn't peaceful.
No, it wasn't, and they had to be, because these people were being harassed by the New York City police. And I guarantee you, when they got a dose of having their police cars overturned and all types of activity like that that lasted for, what, 3 days? Or, for example, when Harvey Milk and Mayor Moscone were assassinated by that asshole Dan White based on the Twinkie defense.
There you go.
San Francisco was turned into an absolute fireball. You know, sometimes you have to react. And sometimes you have to say, no, you're not going to do this shit anymore.
I agree. I agree. Thank you, Jim.
Got it.
Bye now. And we'll try to work one more call in. Okay. No. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, it's Aradia again.
Hi, Aradia.
I don't like to call very much because since I got fired, I can't spend much money giving you.
Oh, you don't need that. No. You don't have to tie those two together. You call anytime you want to.
But I just had a nomination for the Morant people.
Okay.
I was getting training for the job, which I no longer have. And these two men were eating breakfast and looking at the headlines about Haiti. And one man said to the other one, well, you know, the French came and tried to teach them about private property, and they never learned. I could not believe that. I was proud of myself. I kept my mouth shut. I mean, the poor people were private property. It's hard to respect it when you are the property.
Oh, dear God.
Anyways, that's all I wanted to say. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you very much, and call in anytime, okay?
Okay.
All right, bye now. Oh, this has been one busy little Moran Monday, hasn't it? It most assuredly has. And it has come to its end. It's time for the Rick Smith Show, live from behind the Scrapple Curtain in Pennsylvania, coming up in just a matter of minutes. Thanks, everybody, for making this all happen yet again another night. Thanks to Lottie, our moderator in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Matt Osborne, osborneinc.com, is our Southeast correspondent, also blogs at crooksandliars.com, and does a heck of a job there. My head writer is David in Tennessee. Our chief engineer, who is probably working even as I speak, is John Fox down in Australia. And all the streaming happens because of the hard and tireless work of none other than the hardest working man in liberal talk, Ben Birch, at whiterosesociety.org. Thank you, all of you, for your contributions. I have some happy news. We have almost made this month's fundraising goal. We are very, very close. And I want to thank all of you, every last one of you, for getting us to where we currently are. We are almost there for the first time in eons. How about that? Thanks also go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.